Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
A fine newscast, Shawnee.
Thank you so much. Good morning to you, Uncle
Informative,
Dean.
Informative, compassionately delivered. I feel like I now have a full scope of what is going on in the world.
All right, something's up here.
If you're listening to something, your newscast.
Something's coming here.
And hey, Carm, good morning to you, Carm, also.
Thank you, Dean. Back at you.
Andy's not
so
here.
Yeah, so now what are you going to make fun of me about?
Well, I can't give you a compliment.
Yeah, I know, but normally when you do, there's another reason why you're giving me a compliment.
An example of journalism?
Jeez.
I agree. I think the professionalism that Dave brings is, it drips off the microphone.
It's like molasses being tapped out of a tree.
And slowly dripping into a bucket.
Yeah, well, I've said this show is slowly dripping for quite a long time. That's nothing new here. Doesn't it give you goosebumps?
It did then, it does now.
It gives me goosebumps.
By the way,
a lot of people don't know. I mean, of course, it's Star Wars music. May the 4th be with you. Star Wars Day. This is also the music that Shawnee requires that we play when he walks into the radio station. I am not your father.
And may the 4th be with you also.
Thank you.
I was going to just mention, kind of, since we're listening to the music of the great John Williams,
yes.
He was to...
Not of WGN fame.
Different John, yes. Yeah. He was supposed to conduct his own music in Berlin here, and then it was announced that his appearance had been canceled because of a health problem.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he's 93 now.
Wow.
And recently, I believe it was either New York or Los Angeles, they did some of his music, and he was present, but they pushed him out on stage in a wheelchair.
Oh.
So...
feeling better, but
yeah,
you know, at 93,
right? But man, the music he's given us.
When I'm 93 and you have to wheel me in here on Sunday morning, it could be any day.
Yes, no, don't have to wait until you're 93.
That's going to be your ultimate revenge on me.
Push it down the hall.
Yeah. Oh, look, a ramp. Oh, a ramp. Careful.
Oh, no.
This is just the greatest music ever.
It's reminding me of... Do you remember the movie theater, Dean? I bet you do. Eden's 1 and 2.
Of course.
Yeah, I do.
I think that's where I saw Star Wars for the first
time. First Star Wars?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I saw it at... I was working in Aurora... I had just started working at WMRO in Aurora, 1280 AM, the talk of the valley. Somebody said, oh man, you got to go see this movie. It's amazing. So I went by myself to some theater on Ogden Avenue. I think it was in Naperville. Went and watched it, and my mind was blown. Have you seen the Star Wars movie, Shawnee? I know it's...
Yes. The first time I saw it was at the River Oaks Theater in Calumet City when it first came out.
Step away from your TV watching Andy Griffith for a couple hours. But.
That was back in my college days. Saw it when it first came out also then.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Amazing. Amazing. I saw so many movies at River Oaks.
Yeah, that was the big theater.
That was big-time state-of-the-art.
That part of the, the southern suburbs.
Yeah, if you live south or in northwest Indiana or, in that area.
You wanted to make an impression on a date while you took your date to the River Oaks Theater.
Yeah, and then go to the Barnaby.
Go to Barnaby's on Torrance Avenue.
Right down the street.
Right.
That's how I impressed.
Do you remember the Highland Park movie theater, $1.50?
I don't remember.
No, I don't know that one.
It was a buck and a half, and the guy had a boa, and he'd give you the 50-cent piece for your $2 donation.
Wow.
That was a big deal. I remember, I think I was 10 for Flashdance with my parents.
Oh, man, 10?
Yeah.
You were 10?
And my dad's a very serious guy. What's in this movie that a 10-year-old shouldn't see? Well, sir, there's nudity, profanity, and
we're gonna find out. Sit down. Strike
great.
Yourself in.
We'll take three tickets.
What a feeling. What a feeling.
It was amazing. That was good parenting.
Flashdance on the big screen.
Oh,
man.
Come on.
I guess I probably saw it on big screen.
Yeah.
Can't remember.
I can't remember either.
It made an impression. Good old Jennifer Beals and all.
I bet it did.
Yes.
Yep. Those of you wondering why Mark is the way he is, we've just peeled one more layer of the onion away today to learn.
I mean, I also saw like The Natural there, but you know, somehow Flashdance stands out a little more.
Oh, of course. Was that where, do you know where in Highland Park that was?
It's on Central. It's in, they drive by it in Risky Business when they do their little racing scene.
It's not where the theater is in downtown Highland Park where they show all the artsy movies.
That's it. But it's not there anymore. They did something with it. I don't know what happened.
But it's the same spot though, right?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's a big deal. Schwani and I, Mark is filling in for Andy today, so you know, maybe he didn't know. Like, we like to dress up in Star Wars clothes on Star Wars Day. I'm very Luke Skywalker, and Schwani is very Princess Leia today. It's an odd choice, but who am I to judge?
I was startled walking in.
Yeah.
I thought you'd be in my corner here, Mark.
Chained to the desk like Jabba the Hutt. Like we got Leia in the bikini scene.
It's stunningly pulling it off, too.
Yeah.
Oh, the workout regimen is strong.
He's an attractive young woman.
Thank you. Yeah, thank welcome. You so much.
Yeah,
see, I knew there was something up here
Princess
when he was
Leia with an
so
I
complimentary
sticker.
About the news. He was so complimentary about the newscast. I knew something else was down the road.
It was an exceptional newscast.
Thank you very much.
Come on, you got to admit it. Everyone knows that.
So,
okay, so two observations this morning. When I walked into the studio this morning, a bunch of helium balloons floated by the window.
The helium balloons?
Yeah.
By the window.
By the window here.
The one that's directly in back of you.
Directly in back of me, where I closed the blinds.
I was going to say, you must have had the blinds open
at
that
closing,
time.
I was closing the blinds. I don't like the blinds open while I'm performing.
You're performing.
I don't know what those people in the high-rises are doing or looking. I don't want to... Anyway, I closed the blinds.
Yeah, okay. But before you did, there were balloons
the blinds
that
open,
went off.
I walked into the studio and a big bunch of red balloons, 10, 12 balloons. It was like a giant bunch of balloons that flew by the window.
I think he was seeing things.
First time ever.
Could be a sign. I'm not sure of what, but something's going on.
It's a sign that some poor kid lost their balloons on the ground. The ground. That the parents paid quite a bit of money for a bouquet of balloons, and they lost them.
It's quite an activity for 9 a.m. on a or whatever it was.
I know, it was startling.
I can't really think. Somebody's birthday, perhaps, or something like that?
Yeah, probably.
I don't know.
Do you remember the day that, I think it was Dwayne The Rock Johnson was filming a movie here, and helicopters flew by like directly
oh
our
yes
level
yeah
in the window
yeah
scared us all. We thought we were being attacked.
That was exciting.
It was
came right down the river here
right
I think
at our level.
Yeah,
like right we're on the 18th floor. It was like remarkably low for helicopters to be shooting down the above the Chicago River,
but there they were.
But today, dozen helium balloons.
Just balloons.
Yeah, just balloons. No kid attached, no.
No one being pulled up what's the with movie? The balloon.
I forget the Pixar movie where the helium balloons lift the house. What's that movie?
I don't know. So it was can't tell you.
Fantastic movie. It was an older guy that lived in the house, and he rigged up all of these helium balloons that lifted the house, and the house went floating away.
Well, we'll get a text here sooner or later about someone will have the correct title.
Someone will remember that.
Mm-hmm. Up? Could it be Up?
I think it was Up.
Was it just called Up?
Let's go with Up.
Well, that would be appropriate.
2009?
Yeah, that sounds right.
There we go. See?
That sounds right.
That's what I'm here to do.
Okay, and here's my other observation, and it's happens once a year, and it's very moving as I'm driving in today, you know, coming off the expressway into downtown, and you see police officers in their dress uniforms all assembling for the St. Jude March, right, that you reported on?
That's right, yes.
Was your top story?
Yes, yeah. Judy Wang is there and covering the St. Jude Memorial March. Yeah. Started at 8 o'clock at Michigan and Chicago Avenues, and then went west on Chicago, and will be, those closures in that area of downtown will be in place until 11 o'clock for the memorial.
It's just very moving to see all the officers in their dress uniforms at, what was I coming in, like, you know, 6 o'clock, 7, 6:30, something like that. Because believe it or not, there is actually some preparation that goes into the show. I know it doesn't seem like it by listening to it, but you know, we get in early, we start working on the show, but the officers are you know, they're walking all over downtown. They, you know, parking their cars and going to where the march begins, the Memorial March for Fallen Officers, and it's very moving. It gets me every year.
Yes, yeah, it
gets
is.
Me every year. I see it.
Yeah.
I noticed a ton of people coming in, too, a little bit earlier than that. I'm like, what is happening right now? And that's what it had to be.
That's what it was, yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's all. Those are the two observations that I have this morning. And then, you know, happy to see Carm this morning. Always nice to have a Carm visit on our little Sunday show here.
I love my Poppins. I get a little Sunday action, try to, you know, keep the... Just do whatever I can to honor Andy on a Sunday is really what I'm trying to do.
Well, yeah, yesterday you were here also.
Yeah, I get it's a double-double.
Yeah. I think Andy said he was in Vegas.
I think, well, Dave was off to Portugal this week.
Oh, wow.
And he was doing...
So was he filling in for...
I think he probably...
He was in for Dave over the week, during the week, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they let him have time off on the weekend? That doesn't seem right.
I think that's what happened. That does seem very, you know, it's a privilege. There you go. You know, he should have had to work. You're right.
708 area code says, good morning, Dean. What a treat to hear Carm with you and Dave today.
Thank you, 708. Yeah,
nice.
My cousin always is up on Sundays. It's nice of him to do that.
It's good. Doesn't matter if they're, you know, people who are related or not. Another 708, maybe this is also another relative of Carm's. Red balloons might be left over from the Polish Independence Day parade that was yesterday.
Ah, okay.
Ah, now that's very true.
That would stand
that
to reason.
That makes sense, but...
Yeah.
Dean, have you broke down how high up the balloon goes and then what exactly happens to the balloon? Does it pop? Does it come back down to Earth?
No, I've always wondered that when I see a balloon set itself free... you know, does it get to a point in the atmosphere where the helium doesn't work anymore? Or, Shwani, you're the science editor.
Well, I would say one of two things. You know, it would burst for some reason, you know, if it got high enough, but slowly the helium would, you know, leak out of the balloon and it would, you know, just eventually fall. You know, you've seen or heard stories of people attaching cards or some sort of a note to a balloon, yeah, lifting it in the air, and then it's found 50 miles away or something like
that. Right, right.
So, you know.
It's a common sort of memorial.
Right, kind of thing. Right. So, yeah, I would say that, you know, the helium slowly drains out of the balloon and then it just falls to Earth.
AI is telling me that the ultimate limit is determined by the balloon's material and Archimedes principle. Do you guys have any ideas about the Archimedes?
I had an Archimedes principle. Yeah. I had it lanced, and it was.
Who knew it all came down to the Archimedes?
Yeah, because a Mylar balloon. I know, just like balloons in the office kind of thing. A regular balloon is out in like maybe a day or two. Mylar balloons will go on for months. Uh-huh. And I think that has to do with the composition of the balloon itself and the Archimedes, whatever you just said, that I've already forgotten.
The principle. Yeah.
You know, I just had an idea. Maybe we should do the show.
The entire show?
From an air balloon. A lighter-than-air balloon.
I was thinking that we should do the show after sucking helium in.
And everybody talking like this.
I think it's dangerous. I don't think you're supposed to do
that. No, you're not supposed to.
But it sure is funny.
Record height, 33.4 miles.
Wow.
Yeah. Whoa.
According to my esteemed research over here.
Wow, those red balloons I saw then, they have quite a ways to go.
It's a good day.
18th floor is nothing.
Is it, Swanee?
No.
We had helium. This is how it all ties in. If we had the helium balloons, I could sound like Yoda right now.
Well, are you having Dr. Silver on or Dr. Most here in the next half hour?
Dr. Silver, yes.
Dr. Silver. Well, let's ask Dr. Silver whether or not it's
helium?
Healthy to... Yeah, whether or not it's healthy to inhale the helium. Because you're right, it does sound hilarious.
Oh, it's so fun. it's so fun. But I think somebody said it's not...
I've heard that it's not the healthiest thing to
not
do.
Not really good for your brain or something like that. Maybe too late for us.
We're past the point of that. Right,
that's going to be my first question for Dr. Silver today.
But you want to do the show from a hot air balloon sometime?
I would never do that if you paid me $10,000.
I know. You're afraid of heights. You wouldn't go.
Not crazy about heights, and I'm not so crazy about the idea. Like, you know, to be in a, is it like a basket?
The big basket, yes.
You stand in a basket.
Yeah.
And I could be on the ground. There's eating something.
Yes. Well, you can eat in the hot air balloon, too.
No. Quick Google search. There's best Chicago hot air balloons. Gets 2 stars, Dean. That's could be for you. Staff was very helpful, one of the comments. Can you imagine choosing the 2-star for hot air balloon?
It was $5 cheaper. Yeah, I would never do that in a million years. You'd never catch me. Would you, Carm? Would you?
No. I would. If we're talking about that, maybe I would consider a skydive. Just because.
Oh, yeah, never. I would never. Yeah.
But to be stuck on a balloon that might something could go wrong. No.
Yeah.
Like I need to at least know that I'm.
Swanee, would you really do that?
I would want to go up just to see. I've never done it, but I would be curious to see what it's like going up. Yeah. I've heard people say that it's a great thing. Then I've heard other people said that they were scared to death. Yeah. So, you know, who knows?
It looks beautiful from the ground.
It sure does, yeah.
Well, do they still have that Lyle Eyes to the Sky festival every summer?
Maybe.
You know what I'm talking
about? Yeah, there's a great big one in Albuquerque, New Mexico, though, in the fall.
Beautiful when you see them up in the sky.
All the colors. Yeah. So, yeah, but I'd be curious just to try it sometime.
Okay. Well, if you want to go, I'll pay.
And you don't want to do the show from there?
No. Okay. Well, no, you could do your
newscast. That was just a thought. I could do the newscast from up there.
You can do your newscast from up
there. Okay.
And if you see about a dozen balloons up there, they're mine. There are some people who are willing to go up with you in the hot air balloon.
Great.
On the text line.
Excellent. Well, we can do part of the show there after all. Talk to them.
Okay. All right.
You sure you don't want to do this?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Well, when Andy comes back, we'll ask Andy if he wants to do it.
Did someone say Andy? Completely different.
What a great segue.
A completely different Andy. Andy and Barney would never go up in a hot air balloon.
Oh, you never know.
Barney wouldn't go. But it would be hilarious to watch him.
Yes, it would.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, time for America's favorite, the far-flung forecast, our weekly compendium of fascinating facts and figures from the ground.
Yes.
This entire program being brought to you from the ground today.
Actually, the 18th floor, so we're not quite on the ground.
Yeah, close enough. I feel firmness underneath my feet. That's
yes.
That's all I need. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Dave Schwann.
And thank you very much, Uncle Dean. Good morning, everyone. Get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices. We're going down south today to Enigma, Georgia.
Yes.
Enigma, Georgia.
Enigma, Georgia.
Yes.
What a curious name for
that's
a town.
That's exactly why we picked it.
I hope there's someone who will explain
this. The population is, they've actually gone down a little bit in population.
Oh, well, you know.
It was 1,278 in 2010. It was just 1,058 in 2020.
Your census taker.
I'm just giving the facts and figures of the town of Enigma.
Did you go and count all these people yourself?
That's where I was all week.
Okay.
The actual name of the town originally was Gunn and Weston because it was named for two gentlemen that established a sawmill. But then the town started to grow and they wanted a real name for it. So they came up with two names, Lax and Enigma. But the state said Lax had already been taken by another community, so Enigma became the official name August 21st, 1906. Now, recently they've been in the news in the state of Georgia, or that part of Georgia, because employees earlier this year had not been paid because the city's bank accounts had been frozen.
Well, that's an enigma.
And it was a mystery. You know, all 21 of the city's accounts were frozen. Why? Well, that's an enigma. But the mayor presented a solution to be for the accounts to be reinstated. Only one councilman refused to sign some sort of a document, and everybody got very upset. That has since been resolved, though. So the enigma.
Wait, what is the document?
A document, a legal binding
document. Well, I know
document.
I know what a document is, but what did it say?
It said
some
that...
Some people signed it and that one dope didn't.
Right. One councilman there refused to sign and it caused some chaos at a city council meeting. But things have... The enigma has since been resolved, and Enigma, Georgia has a nice day going for it today. It's 65 now, partly sunny, going up to 82. No mystery there. How do you like that tagline? No mystery there.
Very clever.
Thank you.
Very, very clever.
Thank you.
Is that all?
Anything else?
No.
Okay.
Dr. Silver, welcome. Always wonderful to have you on the program with us. Hello.
Appreciate it very much. Happy to be here, Dean.
So we're going to start off with the very serious subject that we were just talking about before the news. We're talking about helium balloons. And I just saw a bunch of helium balloons floated by our 18th floor studio window when I was getting ready to start the show today. And, we're talking about helium balloons, and I had talked about how funny it sounds when somebody inhales a helium balloon, you know, the helium out of a balloon. And, you know, we said, I don't think that's safe. I don't think it's recommended. And we said, we better ask the doctor about this.
Yeah, definitely not safe, not recommended. Although, just full disclosure, I'm a child of the 70s. And so, you know, I've inhaled a lot of balloons. Let's put it that way.
It's funny. But, it's funny, isn't it?
It's funny until somebody passes out and can't breathe, and then maybe not so funny.
There's always somebody in the crowd that's going to spoil a party. So what happens exactly when you inhale the helium? What's happening to your vocal cords? And then, you know, where does the potential damage come in?
Yeah, so let's start with the damage. So helium is lighter than air. You breathe it in, and it mixes with the oxygen in your lungs, and then it becomes absorbed, essentially, in your body. So even if you're standing upright, you would think, oh, well, if it's lighter than air, it'll just come out of my lungs. Well, it doesn't work like that. It displaces the oxygen in your blood, and then you've got a problem, particularly if you're a kid where you've got smaller lungs, you've got less blood volume, your metabolic rate is higher. Kids just burn through oxygen. They always need a ton of it at all times. And so if you take a big chunk of that away, they could die. I mean, it sounds crazy, but it's truly dangerous for children and certainly for adults. The reason why it makes your voice sound funny is it changes the speed of sound through your throat, and that's what makes it sound funny, because it's about three times faster in air than air is. So that's kind of interesting, but yeah, I would leave that for the clowns, so to speak.
Yeah, it sounds like even they shouldn't do it. It sounds like
right. They may have an insurance rider I don't know about, but yeah, don't inhale the balloons. No. And especially, you know, I have to paint a slightly dark note on it too. You don't always know what else is in it nowadays.
Oh.
People do funny things, and you know, you wouldn't want to be inhaling something dangerous. So,
all right. Well, there you go. One major piece of entertainment now shelved forever.
We doctors are good at that, Dean. We're good at just crushing the fun and
killing our
one
fun.
Fell swoop.
Yeah, killing our fun. Helium balloon killer.
That's right. One helium molecule at a time.
That's right. So I was reading a story this week about beta blockers and statins. A lot of people take both for a variety of reasons. And there are positives and there are some negatives. What can you tell us about beta blockers and statins? What are their functions in the best of both worlds? Are there other things that we get positively from them? And are there things that we should be aware of if we are taking these very commonly taken prescriptions?
Sure. So statins are drugs that are metabolized by the liver, and they help to reduce the types of bad cholesterol that build up in our bodies. And so folks with high cholesterol, or the diagnosis of hyperlipidemia in the medical terminology, this is a common drug that's utilized to help them reduce their high cholesterol, their LDL, if you will. And so they're tremendous drugs in the sense that they can extend people's lives and keep them healthy from the standpoint of lowering the risk of coronary artery disease and other types of vascular diseases such as dementia, kidney disease, strokes, and so on. So powerful drug. There are side effects, as you asked about side effects, certainly. Some people have issues with the liver, especially, and they end up not being able to take it. It can sometimes lead to muscle breakdown and sometimes diabetes even. So there's definitely downsides. Like every drug, there's good things and bad things. Interestingly, you were talking about this study that came out just recently, which looked at people with Parkinson's who were on statins and also beta blockers, which I'll talk about in a second. But they had a 10-year increase in the time to diagnosis, meaning they were living 10 years longer without the disease before they were diagnosed.
Without Parkinson's.
And these people without Parkinson's,
yeah.
Right. And so the question is, what's going on here? Should everyone be on a statin? I think the answer is no, not necessarily, but it is interesting given that, you know, Parkinson's is a disease in the brain. There are blood vessels, many blood vessels in the brain. Statins are a drug that help blood vessel disease. And so is there a relationship there between reduced buildup of plaque in the brain blood vessels and the development of Parkinson's? And I think that's one question.
We're not clear on what the answer is to that question at this point?
Correct. Nobody really. This is one of those studies that makes everybody scratch their chin and go, and then, you know, it will lead to more research, ideally. But I think there are definitely some questions raised. Similarly, beta blockers, those are drugs that that people take sometimes to help reduce the sympathetic output of the body. So in some folks, they help with reducing the blood pressure, but also sympathetic stimulation to the heart over time can lead to damaging effects. And so these beta blockers are given to people that have had heart attacks. You get a beta blocker. Many folks are on them, as I mentioned, for high blood pressure anyways or for other reasons. And there was a similar relationship there in the study between the beta blockers and the delay to Parkinson's onset. And so, again, the question is, well, what's going on there? And now it just, you know, just off the cuff, it makes me think about blood vessels, because the action of beta blockers is really, you know, it's keeping those blood vessels nice and soft and supplicant and pliant, and helping reduce arterial stiffness over time. And so perhaps there is some connection there between the stiffness of the vessels and the development of these neurologic diseases. So it's, you know, it's another breadcrumb on the trail to understanding Parkinson's, you know, and a variety of other neurologic issues. But it's, again, it's a piece of the puzzle. It's not the puzzle.
It's really amazing, isn't it? Because beta blockers and statins, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but you'd never heard about them in the past. I don't know, maybe 15, 20 years ago. I don't know when, you know, they became so widely used. But they are sort of like miracle drugs for, you know, for lots of reasons now that they are very commonly prescribed.
There, everybody has them, it would seem, certainly over a certain age range. You know, when you get into the 50-year-old age cohort and above, it's just very common. And they have a plethora of good side effects. As I mentioned, you know, they're helpful to the heart and to the blood vessels and can, you know, in some cases probably contribute to prolonging life. Of course, there are side effects like every other medication, but yeah, there's plenty of benefits to be seen with beta blockers.
219 area code asks, I was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer. I showed no symptoms whatsoever leading up to it. A routine test at the doctor's office showed my numbers on the PSA test. That's the prostate test, I guess, which is taken with it's a blood test, right? The PSA test?
Yeah. Yeah. Prostate-specific antigen. That's what the PSA stands for.
The texter says my numbers were high. The doctor investigated further, and the prostate cancer was found. Are there, I had no physical symptoms, he says. Are there that should alert somebody that they may be, you know, suffering prostate cancer?
Great question. I'm so glad that the caller was able to identify the problem, and wish him great luck in moving through that. Prostate cancer is, you know, the prostate is that gland that sits kind of deep inside the lower pelvis in men, and secretes lubricants into the urethra of the male sex organ, and over time, you know, that it's sort of like a carton of milk. Over time, eventually, the prostate's going to kind of turn in all of us. And so, you know, there are a variety of symptoms that would be concerning. So things like if your stream is suddenly not what it once was, meaning if it slows and it's dribbling when you're trying to go to the bathroom, or if it's intermittent, certainly if you have pain when you're urinating, that would be something to get looked at. If there's blood in the urine or in the semen, even that would be a concern that you'd want to have looked at. And then more general body symptoms like fatigue, weakness, weight loss. Those would be things to look at. And then finally, and this is a very generic one, but if you're having some dysfunction, erectile dysfunction, certainly that could be a result of it. Of a cancer, and there's a variety of other reasons why men have ED, erectile dysfunction, cancer just being one on a list of many things. But essentially when the plumbing stops working, you want to go and see a plumber. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. So those would be some of the things that I would look at. I'd also look at your risk factors. So, you know, if you're African-American, if you have a first degree relative that was diagnosed with prostate cancer under the age of 65, if you know you have BRCA1 or BRCA2, those are breast cancer gene mutations, but if they're in your family, that's another reason to get looked at. So there are definitely risk factors for folks, and there's others. Then you want to get seen and have your PSA looked at.
Yeah, I almost hate to use this phrase, but I've heard it before that if you're going to get a cancer, that prostate cancer is the one you want to get because it is so highly treatable. Is that still the case?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yes. I think if I were going to write down a cancer and say I'm going to have to get it, definitely that would be the one. It's treatable, and in the old days, you know, it was treatable with this very kind of invasive procedure called radical prostatectomy, which is as invasive as it sounds, where they would go in surgically and remove all of the bad tissue in the area, and it's extremely traumatic, and most folks would end up with significant side effects afterwards, not, you know, urinary incontinence and the whole nine yards. Nowadays, depending on the kind of cancer, quote unquote cancer, I put it in quotations because it's such an umbrella term. You know, we're just to zoom out for a second for your callers, Dean. When we say cancer, all we mean is cells that are acting abnormally, right? Normally in the body, the cells are kind of operating on almost like a 24-hour clock, and then they divide at this time of day. And they split up at this time of day, and then you've got two new cells at this time of day, and they start functioning normally at this time of day. So you can think about it at like 6 in the morning, the cells start dividing, and then at night, they're all split up and functioning normally. And with cancer, the cells just lose the clock, and they just do whatever they want. They might divide and split and function by noon, and then, you know, everything's all in disarray, to use that clock analogy. Mm-hmm. And so with prostate cancer, some of these cells are funny looking, but they just aren't doing a whole heck of a lot, meaning that they're slowly dividing over years, and they just don't cause a lot of a problem for you. And so some folks can just sit there with quote unquote cancer, and they just watch it, or they'll do some kind of hormonal therapy with, you know, an anti-testosterone type therapy to kind of keep it at bay. And so the bottom line is there's a variety of types. Not all types are the same. It's almost like different disease states entirely. And so you can live a long, full life with prostate cancer now.
Is it still true that men are hesitant to go to the doctor for whatever reason, that they're not proactive? If they see something wrong, they just rather tough it out and, you know, to hope that it resolve itself. Is there still a gender disparity with that sort of thing?
Well, I think so. And the other reality here, right, is that we're talking about a private area that, you know, nobody, right. You know, if you're married, your wife knows what's going on sometimes not. Yeah. And so it's a tough thing to talk about. But once you get over it and you just say, okay, it's just a part of me, just like the nose on my face, and you kind of get through that stigma, then it's a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah, so, you know, guys, if any of what we've just talked about applies to you, check it out with your doctor. If you're the guy in your life won't do it, everyone else, be proactive and force them to go, because it is very highly treatable. And good luck to our texter who had, in the text said that they took his prostate out, and that he's recovering from that now. So best of luck to you and your recovery on that. And as always, a pleasure to talk with Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Hope you have a great day today, Doc. Thanks so much.
Same, Dean. Thanks for having me.
If I've said it once, I've said it a million times. I can never predict what's going to take off on our text line or not. You know, we can bring up the most serious, pertinent subjects of the day in the news, and nothing. But you bring up, you know, something else on the air, and the phones go wild. The topic of the morning seems to be helium balloons. We were.
And I just heard Dr. Silver say in no uncertain terms,
he was,
do not try this at home.
Yeah, party killer.
Yeah.
Dr. Silver. boy, if that's the case, I'm a dead man walking.
You know what? I had just remembered this. One of my high school chemistry teachers, just for fun, did this once to inhale the helium and, you know, just to, you know, to show what you sound like when you do it. But Dr. Silver explained why you should not do it.
Yeah, I can't. So, I can't tell you the number of, like, multiple times somebody would get helium balloons in the office, and of course I'd snag one.
You would, yes.
And I would bring it in the studio and come on the air. It's like, hey, how are you? Hey. It's hilarious.
Yes.
But very dangerous.
Dangerous, right.
All right.
So does that put an end to your, are you going to?
It puts an end to my helium sucking days.
Okay. Just fill the balloons with helium and just watch them ascend into the air.
Ascend, right. Mm-hmm. But then we start talking about hot air balloons, and you want to do the show in a hot air balloon.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Which is nuts.
That would be fun.
Is nuts.
fun.
Seems challenging on the engineering side over there.
Right. Swanee. Well, this is very true.
Do you know how long the cables would have to be?
If we had the Comrex CR-Z9502.
The wireless version.
Then we could do it.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Z9502.
See, Mark knows.
Yeah, you're both nuts. I got news for you. So. here's 847 area code. Dean, I got married in a hot air balloon.
How about that?
Said it was fabulous.
How about that?
So, do we marry? I can marry somebody.
We already did a tree time.
Yeah, I married somebody at the.
And I was the best man.
Yeah. Maybe if I was going to marry somebody, I might go.
Oh, okay.
Would it be bad if I was crying like a baby during the whole ceremony?
They think you were crying because you were emotional about the ceremony.
Cowering in the right. little basket.
Do you take this down. Person to be?
Get me down here.
Your lawful wedded husband.
630 area code says, taking off and landing in a hot air balloon is fun. Flying in it is boring.
Boring?
That's what they say.
Okay.
That's what he says.
You have to find out for yourself.
I don't, but okay.
Appreciate the beauty up there. You can, don't be bored. That's on you.
630 area code says that helium balloons need to be outlawed. They cause havoc on nature and wildlife because they end up in our waterways where animals mistake them for food. Don't promote them.
Well, there, you know,
I don't want that on my conscience.
You know, yeah, right. You know, that there is a very serious issue about plastics and artificial stuff going into the waterways and the airways. And yeah, it's not good.
Well, between that and Dr. Silver, what's the point? What's the point of getting out of bed today? You know, the original Star Wars movie was not released on this day. A lot of people think because it's Star Wars Day that this is the anniversary of when the movie was released, but it was actually May 25th, 1977, 48 years ago.
So I guess it's May 4th because of the play on the words.
Play
there.
On the words, may the force
may
be with
the
you.
Force may be the force be with you.
Yeah. Exactly correct. We have an interesting WGN connection with the release of Star Wars. When the movie was first coming out, the three then unknown actors were making the rounds, talking to people, trying to get some attention for this film. A young actor by the name of Harrison Ford, a young actress by the name of Carrie Fisher, and another young actor by the name of Mark Hamill were making the rounds. And they stopped by WGN and talked to Roy Leonard on, June 16th of 1977. So this was just a couple of weeks after the original Star Wars movie came out. We have a photograph at the TV station of Roy, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill sitting in the, like, there's a back patio at WGN-TV. That's where all the engineers go to smoke now.
Great spot.
Yeah, we're going to go outside and have a smoke. That's where they sat. We had this lawn furniture. I'm not kidding. That same lawn furniture is still in that back patio all these years later. I don't know what brand it is, but it held up in the weather. I'll tell you that much. We have this great photograph of a young Roy Leonard talking to these, you know, soon to be superstars about this crazy new movie. And a recording that they made out in that patio was recently discovered by Rebel Force Radio. This is a website that is put together by Jimmy Mack, who does some work for us here at WGN with commercials. He is Mr. Wendy Snyder, if a lot of people don't know. He's Wendy's husband, Jimmy Mack. And he's a, you know, super Star Wars fan, and they uncovered this 1977 recording that Roy did with Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill. Here is just a little bit of that 1977 interview. Let me play that for you now. People were actually calling in and asking these three questions.
Three questions about Darth Vader, about the bad guy.
Wow.
Okay. Who played him?
David Prowse.
Oh, good, I'm right. Huh. Okay, and why did he breathe so funny? Did he have asthma or something?
What?
Why did he breathe so funny? Oh. He's wearing a face mask.
A breath mask.
He has a sort of... It's sort of a portable iron lung. He can breathe in any atmosphere. And there was also a rumor that his face was disfigured in the Clone Wars. George has set up this whole history of the galaxy. So many of the facts that are in the script were, you know, not in the film for pace, for whatever reason. But we all know our histories, and that's the interesting part about it. There's so much room for... you know, for what? I'm sorry. I just switched to hyperspace. I apologize.
Okay, Renee?
Yeah.
And let's see, that was two questions. Did you have another one?
Yeah, I was wondering. Okay, and special effects. Were most of those animated?
A lot of them were animated. A lot of them are miniature models that are... there was a special computer system developed to manipulate the camera platform and the model at the same time. So those were all photographed time, frame by frame.
I was wondering, and I hope this doesn't spoil the fun of watching the movie, but you know in the scene when the three of you, along with Chewbacca, are escaping, and you have the dogfight where you shoot down the four interceptors. Now,
yeah.
Could you see what you were doing, or is that all put in afterwards?
No, it was all put in afterwards.
Yeah.
It was a blue screen. I mean, George would say, okay, now look over your right shoulder. They're coming down.
Yeah.
And you'd pretend, just the way you pretended when you played Cowboys and Indians, but to see it on the screen is just a thrill for
imagine,
all of us.
Can you imagine Renee making money for playing Cowboys and Indians?
I'd love to. I'd love to.
How about that? Isn't that cool? From June 16th, 1977, 48 years ago, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, sitting in the backyard, the back garden at WGN-TV, promoting this movie that had just come out a couple of weeks prior. And people were totally into it. They were into the special effects and the characters, and it's so interesting and so fascinating.
The timing is perfect because everything was taking off for the movie. The timing of the interview was perfect.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had sent these three around the country to promote the movie. So a couple of years ago, I interviewed Mark Hamill for a completely different movie, but I showed him a picture. We were on a Zoom. This was right in the middle of the pandemic still. I showed him on a Zoom call the picture of Roy Leonard and all of them at WGN, and I wondered, I mean, can you imagine how many interviews Mark Hamill must have gone through in all of these years if he had any recollection whatsoever about visiting WGN back in the day? And this is what he told me.
Can you guys see me? Are you able? You're able to see the? Because I want to. I want to try to show you something, Mark.
Yeah.
This is a photo that we proudly display at our TV station, yeah. WGN. It's you, Mark, Harrison, and Carrie,
right.
Along with our former entertainment reporter, Roy Leonard. I know you've taken a million pictures since then in 1977. Do you have any recollection whatsoever of that first publicity tour?
Oh, sure. Because we went out on that tour before the movie opened. And I think we went to Vancouver first. And then while we were on the road, it opened. And we landed in Chicago. And I said to Harrison and Carrie, I said, look, there's all these people at the airport. There must be somebody famous on the plane. We were looking around for like an athlete or a movie star. And then I saw, Carrie, look, that girl, she's got the buns on her. And Harrison, there's somebody in a vest. There were people dressed like us. So that was the first time we thought, this is beyond what we expected. We wanted it to be popular, obviously, but for people to go, and they had homemade lightsabers, so they hadn't made any merchandise yet. I thought, this is beyond anything we could have expected. And it was the last time we all went out together, by the way, the three of us. By the time Empire came out, they sent us all separately. So I sort of missed that.
And we are very proud to say that we still have that exact same patio furniture.
In the back of WGN.
So if you ever come to visit us again, you can sit in the exact same spot.
WGN was a staple of when I was living in New York doing theater. So it's a great station.
How about that, Harry? Mark Hamill, remembering when Star Wars first opened, going on tour together when practically nobody knew what Star Wars was. That it was just first coming out. Absolutely amazing, right?
Yeah, and who knew how many sequels were to follow and, various aspects of the story
all
that he was talking about.
Sequels, man. All the merchandise, all the everything. It's quite a phenomena on this, Star Wars Day, as they call it. May the 4th be with you, to remember some of this. And a lot of people on our phone line remembering where they first saw Star Wars, what their reaction was when they first saw Star Wars. I was completely blown away by it. I know that. That's what I remember coming out of the theater. And you said the same thing when you saw it at River Oaks, right?
Right. And one of the things was the fact that now sound was dramatically enhanced with film. The real stereo high-fidelity sound that you would get at a movie theater, in addition to the screen that seemed to be a little more broad than some of the other movie theaters were. That was the big attraction at River Oaks, and the chairs that are now standard in many theaters, the comfortable lounge chair type things.
Yeah, well, I mean,
lazy boy chairs.
The technology. I don't even like those chairs in movie theaters.
No.
Do you? I get too comfortable.
Yeah, you can. You can get too comfortable.
I always say comfortable room, dark room, comfortable chair.
So you bring a folding chair when you go to a movie?
I bring a church bench. I bring a church pew with me wherever I go to make sure.
And you can lay down?
So I know I'm going to be uncomfortable wherever I am, and at least I won't fall asleep.
You move it all the way to the back. Leave me alone.
Yeah, leave me alone. I'm trying to sleep here. Exactly. Some good old memories. The thing that I remember, I mean, I love that it was such a playful story, and it reminded me of these great old adventure series that we used to watch.
Exactly, right.
Flash, Flash Gordon.
Yeah, the bar scene that, played the music from and everything.
Scene was
the cantina scene was great.
Yeah, but these, good guys and bad guys and all this fantasy just brought back a kind of movie that we hadn't seen in a long time. But also visually, things, the special effects, things that we had never seen before.
Right.
Including that iconic, now iconic, scroll at the beginning of the movie, where the music comes on and, the text
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Right? Yeah. You know, kind of, you know, scrolls the screen. Nobody had ever seen anything like that prior to Star Wars.
Right.
You know, so some good memories today.
Yep. Yeah, thanks for bringing all this up. This is great.
Yeah, my pleasure. Shawnee and I are going to have a lightsaber fight later. Hey, you know, that's something to do for tree time next year.
There you go.
Or this year, rather.
There you go. Yeah.
We're out of tree time. We can dress up like our favorite Star Wars
characters. You're always trying to figure out some way to injure me.
I am. Getting
challenged. You know, if it's a bow and arrow, an axe, something, you know.
Did I do something with an axe?
No, but I'm sure that was under consideration.
I can think about it. Speaking of that, by the way, somebody texted in that they do, let me see if I can find the text here, that they do hot air balloon rides. I can't find the text right now, but they launch hot air balloon rides somewhere very near tree time. So we can...
Well, that open area out there, yeah.
Yeah, we can incorporate, you know...
A hot air balloon launch and tree time.
And both into one.
How about it?
That's how we arrive.
This is how we do it.
That's how we arrive at tree time this year.
Right, in a hot air balloon.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get in the hot air balloon.
Descend in that field.
And then we descend like the Wizard of Oz. Time once again for the Week in Theater. What's going on stage in Chicago before we get to that? And a show celebrating its 32nd anniversary, believe it or not. Wanted to go over what's going on stage in New York City. The Great White Way on Broadway. Tony nominations came out this week. And there's some very definite Chicago connections. Some of the biggest award winners, like Death Becomes Her, the adaptation of the old Meryl Streep Goldie Hawn movie that they turned into a musical. And they did the world premiere, pre-Broadway tryout here in Chicago. It was last year that they did that. It's been a while, but man, did that show get rave reviews. I loved it. It was so entertaining. Just a good old-fashioned farcical kind of musical that was very inventively staged, amazingly performed, and did its run here in Chicago, went to New York, and became a huge hit there, still is running there now, and was nominated for 10 Tony Awards. There were three shows that got 10 nominations. Death Becomes Her, Buena Vista Social Club, and maybe Happy Endings. Those were the big three of this year's nominations. The other nominations that were announced this week, I just had the list here, and the computer just went nuts on me. Here we go. For Best Musical, Buena Vista Social Club nominated, Death Outlaw, Death Becomes Her, Maybe Happy Ending, and Operation Mincemeat, a new musical. For Best Play, the production called English was nominated. The Hills of California. John Proctor is the villain. Oh, Mary. And another show with Chicago roots, Purpose, which got its start at the Steppenwolf Theater, which is, loosely based on the, political family of Jesse Jackson. The play isn't about the Jacksons. They don't say that it's about the Jacksons, but it's about a family that's involved in politics, and there's all kinds of drama and controversy which is involved. But among the nominees from Purpose, Chicago's very own Harry Lennox. We couldn't be happier for him. He's been on the show many, many times. For Best Revival of a Play, the nominees were Eureka Day, Romeo and Juliet, Thornton Wilder's Our Town, Yellowface, and author David Henry Hwang. For Best Revival of a Musical, the nominees were Floyd Collins, Gypsy, Audra McDonald getting another nomination. She is now the most nominated actress in Broadway history. Pirates, the Penzance musical nominated, and the new production of Sunset Boulevard getting its nomination. Let me run down some of the performers who were nominated this year, including for Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role in a Play, George Clooney for the Edward R. Murrow play, Good Night and Good Luck, Cole Escola for Oh Mary, John Michael Hill for Purpose, Daniel Day Kim for Yellowface, as I mentioned, Harry Lennox for Purpose, and Lewis McCartney, Stranger Things, The First Shadow for Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role, Laura Donnelly for The Hills of California, Mia Farrow for Roommate, LaTanya Richardson Jackson for Purpose, Sadie Sink for John Proctor as the Villain, and Sarah Snook for The Picture of Dorian Gray. For Best Performance by an Actor in a Musical, Darren Criss for Maybe Happy Ending, Andrew Duren for Dead Outlaw, Tom Francis for Sunset Boulevard, Jonathan Groff, the Bobby Darin musical, Just in Time, James Monroe Iglehart for Wonderful World, the Louis Armstrong musical, and Jeremy Jordan for Floyd Collins. For Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role in a Musical, the nominees: Audra McDonald for Gypsy, Jasmine Amy Rogers, she played Betty Boop in the Boop musical that got its world premiere here in Chicago. We had her on the show when the show was here less than a year ago. Nicole Scherzinger for Sunset Boulevard, and also Jennifer Simard and Megan Hilty, the two leads of Death Becomes Her. And they were terrific. They joined me on our WGN-TV Midday News, and we had a nice chat with these now Tony-nominated actresses.
Busy time in the downtown theater district right now. We also have another pre-Broadway world premiere that just opened up, Death Becomes Her, which is at the Cadillac Palace Theater, a live stage musical based on the 1992 movie of the same name. Joining us are the stars of Death Becomes Her from the TV series Smashin', many other stage and TV roles, Megan Hilty, and also two-time Tony Award winner Jennifer Simard. Ladies, welcome. So nice to have you here with us.
Thank you.
And I didn't know till now that I actually won the Tony Award. I was actually nominated twice.
You were nominated twice?
Nominated twice, but I'm a two-time loser.
Let's just give you the statues.
Okay.
Really, I got nominated once, too.
Yes,
we're nominees together.
Let's get three statues in for these ladies. I was misinformed. I apologize.
Okay. I just can't take credit for something I didn't actually
win. I would have taken the credit.
But you know what I can take credit for? I, too, am a self-obsessed, moral-free weasel in Death Becomes Her, just like Jason Alexander.
You two have so much in common.
Like any time I can work the word weasel into a review.
That's right.
One happy critic when that happens. Congratulations on this, because it's got to be so exciting. I mean, you're both so accomplished, but to be doing a pre-Broadway world premiere, I would think has to be extra special. Is it?
It does feel very special to build something from the ground up like this, especially when it's built off of something that is so iconic and so beloved already.
And everyone has been commenting to me, hearing that this was coming. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I saw the movie. Oh, I love the movie. How similar is it to what people remember from the 1992 movie?
Excellent question. You're going to have to come and see all the Easter eggs that we've sprinkled throughout the musical.
Yes.
And, of course, the writers have taken it in the direction that only musical theater can bring, and it's just added frosting to an already delicious cake.
Yeah, and you have quite a cast with you here in Chicago, don't you?
Yes, Christopher Sieber and Michelle Williams. They're remarkable, everybody. It feels like every day I'm pinching myself because we're surrounded, cast, crew, creative team. It's just the best of the best.
Yeah, what's it like to be working with the Destiny's Child member?
It's amazing.
It's gotta be kind of cool.
She is so wildly talented, and she is also so warm and lovely and so fun to work with.
So humble, and just dove right into this with such abandon, and you just have to come see her tear up the stage.
Yeah.
And our ensemble, the unsung heroes of any show, they are some of the most wonderful human beings and talents you'll ever see.
Mm-hmm. I always have such admiration for actors, especially, that are working in pre-Broadway productions, because it's been my experience in observing this, is that they are changing your script every single day, probably several times a day, I would imagine. What's that process like?
We just had a big scene go in last night, and we were so proud of ourselves because we nailed
it.
We did it.
Is it just dialogue, or is it like...
Sometimes it's songs.
It's like songs are coming in and songs are coming out, right?
That's right, and that's part of the excitement. Go ahead.
Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry. But what that also does is it changes... huge technical cues. There are so many elements that, yes, we're doing an extra scene, but then they have to really work overtime backstage to make all of that stuff happen.
That's right. And our stage manager, Rachel Sterner, and the team she's assembled is probably one of the best I've ever worked with.
Ever.
You agree?
Yes.
I know.
Yeah.
We talk about it.
All the time.
And also in Chicago, this is such a great theater town, and I hope your citizens and fans know that, because what a gem. Mm-hmm. And the local crew here, the locals here, to a person, have been just amazing. And I can see why a lot of shows come here to try out.
And the audiences, too. The audiences are so warm and receptive. The energy is electric. But also, we know immediately what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
Really savvy.
So savvy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh,
my God.
Always,
oh, my God. Jinx, you owe me a Coke.
I always tell the story about how when Mel Brooks brought the producers here before I went to Broadway. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him about it. He said, I would never do a pre-Broadway show any place but Chicago because the audiences give us so much back.
Yeah,
I agreed.
Can't top that.
No.
Death Becomes Her will run through June the 2nd. It's at the Cadillac Palace Theater. If you want to get more information, you can go to BroadwayInChicago.com. Megan Hilty and EGOT winner, Olivier Award winner. How many awards should I give you?
Oh, there's too many to list, Dean.
Yeah. It's got my Boy Scout medal for good conduct.
That's right.
Jennifer Smart, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, there you go. They were on our WGN Midday News while the show got its world premiere start here in Chicago before moving on to Broadway. Now they're both Tony nominated, as is the show. Ten nominations going in. A lot of people think that they may wind up being the big winner. We'll find out. The Tonys are going to be given out in early June. A quick break, and then the Chicago production that is celebrating its 32nd anniversary. Dean Richards Sunday Morning continues with the Week in Theater. What's going on stage in Chicago? The big news this week. That there is a show that is celebrating its 32nd anniversary, beginning of June. We have talked about the show many times. We've had the co-creator of the show on with us many times. And once again, Vicky Quadi joins us in studio to talk about her show, Late Night Catechism.
Excellent.
You did bring your ruler in case I get out of hand.
I did. I brought the ruler, and I just wanted to say, Dean, that you made the offer to me to do this by phone.
Yes.
You know, but I said, no, I wanted to be here in person because it's easier to save souls when you're there in person. And I'm still working on you. I'm still working on you.
Yeah, well, so, you know, don't give up.
No, I'm not. In fact, I brought, because I figured it's a get-out-of-hell-free card.
Oh, perfect.
I got three of them because
that's
I know
funny.
One is not enough.
Yeah, for me, that's really, that may not be enough.
You know.
this show, Late Night Catechism, how did this even get started? How did you create this thing?
It was just going to be a little... 1 hour bit of entertainment at Live Bait Theater. There's an actress in Chicago named Mary Pat Donovan who wanted to do a stand-up comedy routine about the lives of the saints. She asked me to work on it. And I sort of took that idea, and for 3 weeks I just researched, and I came back with the script for Late Night Catechism, which is, in my mind, I wanted it to be a classroom. I wanted her to be a nun. I took her ideas of the saints and I incorporated that. But it was really that shared Catholic experience that so many people have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I didn't even go to Catholic school. I wasn't raised Catholic. I'm a Greek boy. But who can't relate to a nun,
right?
You know, old school nun in the full
right.
Outfit.
Right. You know exactly what it is.
You know exactly what it is, and you see the ruler, and like, you know, all my friends that went to Catholic school, they were like, you do not mess with the nuns. They will get the ruler out,
that's
and
you, right.
Your knuckles are going to get over.
That's right. That nun could be 4 foot tall,
yeah.
And you were still afraid of her.
Yeah. Was there any kickback when you first started this? Did anyone say this is too irreverent? You're making fun of the church. You're making fun of Catholicism. Anything?
Initially, not, because it was such a small show and it was very Chicago. But the more we took it on the road, the more people would say, "I don't know about this show," and it seems like you're mocking religion. And we'd say, "No, no, no! It's such a respectful, funny show. Come and see it." So we offered so many tickets to people. We also always give free tickets to nuns, and we get a lot of nuns, and then they would talk it up. And then we could say, "Oh, you know, if you're object to this, you can contact this order of nuns because they'll tell you how much they really like it." And so it built from there.
Yeah,
we don't get that too much any longer.
Yeah. What is the what do you think the attraction is? Is it just like a throwback to people's, you know, growing up and the shared experience?
It is
of
it,
dealing with nuns and the church and the rules and the guilt and the,
it does,
the whole deal.
But it almost goes beyond that. It goes, like you said, you're not Catholic, although I'm telling you, a little holy water. Next time I come, it's holy water.
Can you do
time.
A conversion?
It'd be easy to do.
Oh, all right.
I'll call a priest. We'll do the prayers over the phone.
I'll be. But
everyone has, you know, 99.9% of the world has some kind of religion. So you understand the importance of religion in your life. And this show has that Catholic bent, of course. But we get lots of people who are not Catholic who come, and they get it too. They get the fact that you were raised a certain way. Your mother, your father, mostly your mother, raised you to have certain values. And In the Catholic experience, that's what the nuns did. You spent often more times with that nun than you did with your own family.
Right, right.
So the nuns became really important.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, a part of this also is that the show is just plain old funny.
It is.
I mean, it's, you know, that it reflects back on your youth and, you know, we can overanalyze a little bit. But it's just a funny show.
It's
funny. That's
right.
the main thing, right?
And it's smart. It's a smart show. It's really funny. It's interactive, so you don't know what you're going to get. So you can see the show one day and come back a month later and see it and bring your friends and think, boy, this is a different show. Because the interactivity of it makes it really exciting for the audience, but for the performer, too.
Yeah, yeah. So you said the first shows were done where? At the Live Bait Theater?
Live Bait Theater.
And then how did it progress from there now?
Well,
could you ever have imagined when you did this that we'd be sitting here 32 years later talking about your show?
Not at all.
Isn't that something? That says something about the quality of the show and the timelessness
of
the show, right?
Plus, the show evolved. You know, it got shinier and shinier and shinier, and we cut certain things and added certain things, and we made it so that it really was that shiny penny that stood out. No. I had no idea. 6 weeks, 2 performances a weekend, 12 performances. Who's going to come to this? We really lucked out. We got great reviews. And what really set us is that the Tribune came out and reviewed us. And that made a huge difference.
That made it legit.
Yeah. Exactly.
Was it Dick Christensen who?
No. Richard Christensen did not review us, although he always said hello when he saw us. So that was nice. No, it was Sid Smith reviewed us.
Sid Smith, wow.
Yeah. And liked it quite a lot, which was great.
Yeah.
And Andrew Patner reviewed us for the Sun Times.
Yeah.
You know, and we got to know Andrew, too. I know that
Roy Leonard did, because I'm pretty sure that I heard about the show from him.
Roy Leonard, huge supporter, absolutely.
But then, you know, I've seen the show several times.
And you're a huge supporter.
I think it's a funny show. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's when you have a show that can sustain itself for this long,
right?
That says something. But I've come back and, you know, seen it several times to see how it's changed and evolved. And, you know, you're holding your own with all of this, despite the fact that it's sometimes difficult to keep a show up and running.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially the past few years. It's been very difficult to do.
The last 5 years, just been very, very hard. But people are coming back out. I have really noticed that. People, you can stay home and you can watch Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and all that stuff. But there's nothing quite like going out for a night.
Yeah.
You go to dinner, you go to a show, you know, you spend time with your friends. It's just that excitement of being in the theater that people are missed. And now I see that more people are coming out.
Yeah. So where can people see Late Night Catechism these days?
Well, I have just made an arrangement with IO Improv Theater.
Oh, great.
And we're going to be doing shows there. So we do the anniversary shows June 1st. We actually opened the Memorial Day weekend in 1993.
Wow.
But June 1st was the closest Sunday to that day, mm-hmm. so that's why we picked that. Then we're skipping the summer because summer's so terrific in Chicago. You know, get out, enjoy the city, enjoy the festivals. But in September, it's a kind of a back-to-school arrangement. So we're doing 4 Sundays in September. And then if it warrants it, we'll just keep going.
See maybe how
we'll
it goes.
Do another 32 years there.
But at the IO Theater, back in September.
And well, we start in June 1st, and then we're there for the month of September.
Okay. All right. So. All right. Very good. Well, the IO Theater spot, it's great, right near North Avenue in Claiborne.
Right there.
I forget the exact address, Kingsbury.
It's 1501 North Kingsbury.
Yeah, but it's very easy to get to. Just hop off the expressway at North Avenue, and you're right there. It's a beautiful, fairly new facility.
It's very nice. Oh, and the Candlelight Pizza place store there. I mean, he has a restaurant there.
Oh, great.
So you can get, I don't know if you remember Candlelight, which is still there on Western near Howard.
Yeah.
So now that Candlelight has opened there. So you can get pizza and hamburgers and stuff like that.
A little bite along the way.
A little bite. Yeah.
People want to get more information about this. What's the best way to do it?
Well, they can go to ioimprov.com, which is that site. Then go to nunsforfun.com, N-U-N-S, the number 4, fun. That's my site, nunsforfun.com. And I'll be posting a lot of stuff on that site. They can call my office, I suppose, if they wanted to, which is 773-388-0730.
Okay.
There's lots of ways to get
good
information.
Well, here's to 32 more years.
I know, right?
Exactly. Late Night Catechism, 32nd anniversary performance is Sunday, June 1st. Vicky Quadi, its co-creator, thank you so much for coming
in.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Don't forget your Get Out of Hell Free cards.
Keep their ruler over on that side of the desk. So, Carm, I feel like I should be getting excited about the Cubs.
Dean, you know,
seems like things are like sort of red hot over there.
I am generally a pessimist when it comes to believing in a team in May, but I think you can believe in this Cub team. I mean, they're leading the big leagues in runs scored, run differential. They're hitting. The lineup is deep. They look good. I think it's time to get Cubby excited.
I keep checking with Andy every week. When do I hop on the bandwagon?
What does he say?
He agrees. He says, you know, get on now because he thinks it's going to be a good year.
Yeah. No. They. I mean, the division's real mediocre. They're starting to already pull away. It's early. They've also lost one of their starting pitchers for the year in Justin Steele, so that wasn't great. But hey, they just keep on clicking on here. Pecor Armstrong, super exciting. So that is
I've been waiting for the Cubs to have a star since the Bryant and Rizzo days, and this guy's emerging, so that's exciting.
Wow. Yeah, it's been a while since we've had guys like that to get excited about. Schwanee, are you excited?
Oh, I think it's fine. Emphatically.
Have you been to a Cubs game in the last decade, Schwanee?
Yes,
ever? Have you ever?
Yes.
Do you know what that big place is over at Addison and Clark Street?
Yes, I do. I do. Yes, I've been there, and I I too am excited about it. There's a lot of good things going on with the Cubs right now.
It's totally okay to not have gone or, you know.
We're not going to be judgmental.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be kind of pathetic, but, you know.
Yeah. But you did grow up in, you know, did you grow up a Sox fan, Schwanee, or?
You know, I've always from been partial
up in Northwest
to,
Indiana.
I've always been partial to the Cubs. And the only reason I think it was just more fun to watch the Cubs at Wrigley Field and Jack Brickhouse's enthusiasm.
Jack Brickhouse, man.
Ernie Banks being my hero, you know, every time he hit a homer, it was always hey. Well, for that matter, you know, with Ron Santo and Billy Williams and all those other players, it was just more fun to watch the Cubs, you know.
Well, we grew up White Sox fans because we lived on the South Side.
That was where I saw my first game, though.
Old Comiskey Park.
At Old Comiskey Park,
Me too. Same, me too. But then it became clear that it was a lot more fun on the North Side. And then, you know, once I started here and we owned the Cubs at the time. Kidding me? Free tickets. I'll change your allegiance in no time.
Yes, right. I'll never forget 1989, when the Cubs were in the playoffs in the division, they gave us a ticket to go. We went to a night game. Ryan Sandberg hit a homer. And I'll never forget seeing that ball just sail right over the center field. It was beautiful.
That was very nice of Marlene to give you that ticket.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
You know it was. You know that's exactly correct.
That is true. That is true. Marlene, I don't deny it.
Marlene Wells is still the keeper of everything here at WGN.
And I turned to everyone then, and I said, oh, this is fine.
Yeah, that's right. You've been saying that for decades. People think that's just a joke we have on the show. Schwanee's been saying that since I've known him. 45 years or however long it's been.
44. But be 44 next month.
Yeah, but who's counting? On this day in 1970, a sad anniversary, it is the 55 years ago today, the Ohio National Guard opened fire on Kent State University students.
Wow.
Protesting the Vietnam War.
Steve Stone was there he was at Kent State at the time for a tie-in.
Oh, wow.
As a student?
I'm 98% certain. Don't want to be quoted on that, but I know he's got a connection to that.
55 years ago. He had to be a student 55 years ago.
He's talked about it a bunch.
Four students killed, 9 were hurt. Horrible day in American history. But, that happened May 4th, 1970. There is a visitor center at Kent State. That you can go to. They're having commemorations today to honor those who were killed and injured during that horrible event.
You know, that brings to mind that horrible picture of someone laying dead in the grass and the young lady just kneeling by them, crying. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an unbelievable photo. Also on this day, I don't usually go down the on this day in history thing, but there's some interesting things that happened on May 4th through the years. 1865, President Abraham Lincoln was buried at Springfield's Oak Ridge Cemetery. His body had to be moved 17 times.
That's right.
Between 1865 and 1901.
There were threats of grave robbers. And you can see the original crypt when you go to Oak Ridge Cemetery. When you go to the existing, you know, memorial there where he is buried today, if you go around it and then go down the hill, that original crypt is still there where they originally entombed him and then later his son that died.
Robert Todd Lincoln.
All of the Lincoln family is buried now in the existing memorial.
I'm looking at a picture here, and there's a giant I don't know what you call it. It's a burial vault, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But the President Lincoln's body was lowered into this 10-foot deep vault and buried under concrete.
Yeah, that was on the orders of his son, Robert.
Wow.
Because he just said, enough is enough. We've gone through this period
17
of,
times.
Yeah, we've gone through this terrible period of, you know, threats of, you know, the body being stolen and it had to be moved here and there. And he just said, we're going to put an end to this once and for all. And
why would anybody say, I mean, why would you want to steal President Lincoln's body?
Money. It wanted a ransom. Yes.
Oh, to steal it and then I'll give it back to you if you pay.
Right.
What do you do with it after you've stolen it?
Right. Where do you put it?
How does that work, Swan?
That's what you do. He was so.
What do you mean? That's what you do.
Well, if you're going to kidnap or take a body, that's what you would want is ransom.
Yeah, but this is
a dead person. Yes,
this is a dead person.
I know, but a very revered.
They did not person. Have the refrigeration that we enjoy no, they today.
Didn't. Want to know something else? They opened the coffin before they put it in the vault.
Oh, no.
And there were people that knew him because they wanted to verify that that was indeed Abraham Lincoln. You brought it up.
You need to be paid extra for this level of knowledge, I think.
Well, you've been to the Lincoln Museum, right, Trani?
Oh, yes.
Many times,
yeah,
if I remember.
Down there and done all the Lincoln sites and have done, well, we did a story on the home as part of our National Park series several years ago. You okay in there?
Well, I'm just trying to imagine when they opened the coffin, what they saw in there.
Well, the descriptions that I read was decomposition, but there still was, you know,
was obviously him.
It was him, and then they sealed it once and for all and put it in the concrete.
It's a good reminder for all of us.
Yes.
What do you mean? For what?
I don't know. What lesson
do we learn from this?
I just, you know.
Careful how you're going to be buried.
And now of the story.
Somebody may try to steal your body later on.
Might lean me towards the cremation, you know, choices just hearing this moment in time.
After I die, if anyone wants to dig me up and steal me, you're more than welcome.
You're going to be buried with the pictures, right?
With your pictures? Oh, I'm going to have those on eBay way before I die. I don't know if Carm knows
this. Hey, you brought this up.
I have some very incriminating pictures of Schwani from back in the day when we were youngsters at the Diana restaurant that used to be in Greektown, where you could pretty much do anything in this restaurant and nobody would say anything.
Get away with it.
And I have photographic evidence of Schwani's antisocial behavior, shall we say.
All I can say is you were there also.
Yeah.
I think this is...
But the pictures are of you. The pictures are not of me. I was there and I was doing the same thing. But the photographic evidence is of you.
Can we move on now?
I'm proud of you. It's okay. You were young. You were young.
I was.
That's right.
I was.
Full of ouzo.
I was young.
Yes. That's right.
I didn't have a drop to drink that night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was not. You could have leaned into that, and it would have been made it more okay, perhaps.
I still can't get past this Lincoln thing.
You brought it up.
I'm going to be thinking about this all day today.
You brought it up.
I know. Al Capone was taken to prison on this day in 1932.
Tax evasion.
Yeah. I was taken in a Pullman railroad car to a prison in Atlanta, and he had quite the quote here. Let me find it. Got all my
watch the language.
Got all my Abraham Lincoln research here. was found guilty. 5 counts of income tax indictments, 11 years in prison. And he said, what do I think about it? Well, I'm on my way to do 11 years. I've got to do it. That's all. I'm not sore at anybody. And I hope Chicago will be better off and the public clamor will be satisfied.
Wow. Yeah. Didn't he do time at Alcatraz also?
I don't know.
In the island there off San Francisco?
Yeah, I don't know. I was at Tofano's restaurant that I've talked about many times.
Ooh, delicious.
The other day. Love that place. And I was looking at the pictures on the walls, and I asked the owner, Joey DeBono, who's this? He goes, oh, yeah, that's my grandpa, that's my grandmother, and Al Capone's sister.
Is that right?
It was.
How great is that? Al Capone's sister stopping in for some eggplant parm. Over at the Tofano's restaurant. They're going to be on TV with me this coming Wednesday.
What time?
Joey's going to be on Wednesday morning at 9:30.
Oh, when you do that TV show.
That little TV show that we do. You mean the number one morning TV show in Chicago? That one, yeah. He's going to be on, and we're going to make his famous eggplant parmesan together.
Because that sounds good.
It's the greatest eggplant parmesan in the history of eggplant parmesan.
I'll bet.
And it's his grandmother's recipe. His grandmother and grandfather started the restaurant in 1930. Get that. Almost 100 years.
Is it in the same location?
Yeah.
Wow.
They've expanded. Grandma used to live right next door. Nona used to live right next door. And they put a window in between her apartment and the restaurant. And she would make the eggplant parm in her house. Open the window and pass it through to the restaurant so they could serve it to the customers.
How fresh can you get?
Right?
Really? Passed it through the window?
Nona was there, made the eggplant parm in her own kitchen, passed the tray in to the restaurant so they could serve it.
Oh, wow.
And they've been serving it now for 95 years. It's so delicious. I swear it's the greatest eggplant parm that I've ever had any place. And Joey's going to show us, Joey DeBono, now the owner, he's going to show me how to make it.
The recipe had to come directly
from
the old country.
Yeah. Oh, you know it did.
Yes.
Of course it did. And it's always best. There's a movie that's coming out. This coming Friday, called Nonas, which is grandma in Italian. It stars Vince Vaughn, and he opens an Italian restaurant in Staten Island, and he hires four grandmas, four nonas, to cook in the restaurant, because everybody says, you know, when the food is really great at a restaurant, somebody's grandma must be in the kitchen cooking. So that's what this movie is about. It's based on a true story, a true restaurant in Staten Island, New York. So this movie's coming out. So I thought this is a good time to tell the Nona story about Joey and how his Nona used to make the eggplant and pass it through the window into the restaurant. Yeah. So it'll be fun.
Dean, you have to go over there and get it now.
You should know that I took you up on, last time I was in, you were talking about Libertad, a Mexican restaurant in Skokie.
Oh, yes. Have you gone?
I went. It was phenomenal.
Isn't
so thank
it a
you.
A great place.
We had a great time. It was lovely.
Yeah. It's not, I had a hard time describing it because it's not a Mexican restaurant. It's, I guess you would say Latin American, right? Like upscale Latin American, I guess I would, if I was going to generalize.
A lot of veggie options, too. All the shishito peppers you can eat.
Mm.
Little cauliflower, roasted cauliflower, baby carrot, entree, bronzino.
Yeah, all good.
Got after it.
All right, good. Are you veggie?
I'm not, but my girlfriend is. So it was, you know.
So you have to honor the.
It was fun for the whole family.
You have to pretend like you don't mind.
I do. I mean, I like everything. Let's go. What do you got?
I'm with you. I'm with you.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
I mean, bring it on. I'll have a watercress and a jicama.
Yeah. And then on his way home, stop and get a waffle.
Right. And then we're going to.
You're going to have a what?
Mickey D's on the way home. We're good.
Yeah.
Give me a Brussels sprout.
Yeah.
Don't even need the bacon. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. Put extra cheese on it.
It was actor Gary Sinise's connection to this movie and his exposure to all things military, playing Lieutenant Dan, that started off his now passion for veterans issues. Gary Sinise has become maybe one of the most outspoken advocates for veterans, members of the military, military families. And it was for that reason, a couple of weeks ago on our WGN TV morning news, that we talked with Gary via a Zoom. Gary Sinise, of course, who co-founded Steppenwolf Theater Company in a church in Highland Park many years ago with John Malkovich and Laurie Metcalf and, you know, the original ensemble of Steppenwolf. So his roots go deep into Chicago, but his roots now are for veterans affairs. And what an honor, as always, to talk with the great Gary Sinise.
Award-winning actor Gary Sinise has become known for his advocacy for veterans and military members and their families. His foundation sponsors retreats to Disney World and builds houses and provides grants and so much more. April is designated as the month of the military child. And Gary joins us right now. Hello there, my friend. How are you?
Hi there, everybody. Good morning.
Hi. Good to have you with us. Gary, could you ever imagine when you and Malkovich and all the rest were starting up Steppenwolf in Highland Park way back in the day, that your life would have evolved into one of really sort of full-time advocacy for veterans and members of the military?
Way back then, no. I would have never imagined it. We were so focused on trying to build a theater company at that time. And this goes back to the 70s and 80s when we established the theater and we eventually moved from Highland Park into the city. We were just busy doing our theater thing and everything. But there was a play, actually, that I did in the early 80s called Tracers. It was a play written by a group of Vietnam veterans. We did it at the Steppenwolf Theater. I have Vietnam veterans in my family. I wanted to very much do something that would speak to the Vietnam veteran experience. And so I directed this play, and that led to an association with some of the local veterans groups there in Chicago. I ended up back in the 80s trying to supporting the building of the Lansing Veterans Memorial back then. And all that was kind of setting the stage for what would happen later on after I played Lieutenant Dan and Forrest Gump. And then we were attacked on September 11th, and all of a sudden, everything just snowballed into a full-time mission, which turned into the Gary Sinise Foundation.
And we mentioned how April is the month of the military child, and I'm so touched by when I see things on social media, Gary, that you're doing. It's not just for the veterans and building homes for the injured veterans, but this Snowball Express that you do, especially for military children. Talk about that. It's unreal.
Yeah, well, the whole family serves in defense of our country. Obviously, the families go through quite a bit. And, you know, unfortunately, quite often we lose people and the families have to endure the pain and the grief and the loss. And we have several programs at the Gary Sinise Foundation where we focus on the children and the families of our fallen heroes. And one of that, as you mentioned, is Snowball Express, which actually started out, it started up in 2006 as its own nonprofit. I got involved in 2007, started supporting it, and then in 2018 we brought it under the umbrella of the Gary Sinise Foundation and expanded the programs. We do events all across the country on a year-round basis for the families of our fallen heroes, and then the big event that we do at the end of the year in December is we call it Disney in December, and we take over 1,000 kids who have all lost a parent in military service, and then over 500 children of fallen first responders. We take them to Disney World for an all-expenses-paid trip right before the holidays, which can be a very, very difficult time for families who have lost someone. Mm.
You're doing some documentary work as well. Tell us about that, Gary.
Well, you must be talking about Brothers After War. Brothers After War is a documentary focusing on the returning veteran. We did a movie back in probably 2009, 2010, called Brothers at War. Those are some clips from Brothers at War. This is a clip from Brothers After War that you're seeing there. And Brothers After War is a follow-up film to the first film, where the first film you watch active duty folks that are dealing with life in the military overseas in the war zones and what their families are enduring back home. And Brothers After War follows a lot of the same veterans that we met in the first movie, and many of them have transitioned out of the military, and we follow them to find out how they're doing and what the transition out of military service is like for them. And it can often be very, very difficult, but thankfully a lot of the veterans that are in Brothers After War, they share their stories, and it's hopeful. It's a hopeful movie. I encourage any veteran or military family or anyone to look at Brothers After War so you can better understand what it's like to serve and then come home and transition out of the military.
Gary, it's been a while since we've spoken with you. We wanted to express our condolences to you on the loss of your son, Mac. You have a wonderful tribute to him on the Gary Sinise Foundation website, and you continue to celebrate all that he did before he passed away in January of last year, right?
Well, thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, my son, Mac, he had a very rare cancer called chordoma. It really affects only about 300 people in the U.S. per year. Quite often, they can take the initial tumor out and it's cured, but about 30% of the time it comes back and spreads, and that's what's happened to Mac. He worked for the foundation. He was very dedicated to the foundation. He was a great, great musician. And fortunately, in the final year of his life, which, of course, we didn't know that was going to be the final year, he got back to music. He had been disabled by the cancer. He got back to music after a long time because he was fighting cancer, and he created an album called Resurrection and Revival. It's a beautiful, beautiful record. The proceeds from the album, the vinyl sales, go to the Gary Sinise Foundation as he wanted. And then after he passed away, I started searching through his files, and I found all this additional music that he wrote. Beautiful stuff. I couldn't leave it on the laptop, so yeah. I went to work. We created Resurrection and Revival Part 2.
Unbelievably touching. Musicians brought your son's music to life. Is that right, Gary?
Yeah, he wrote that piece that you're hearing right now is called Arctic Circles. He started writing it in college, and he never finished it, and he went back to work in 2023, and he finished that music right there. That's his buddy Oliver Schnee, and they teamed up. They finished the music. They went into the studio in July of 2023 with a group of excellent, excellent studio musicians from Los Angeles, and they're right now. They're playing that music that you're seeing right now. They're playing Arctic Circles. That was the first time I saw it or heard it, and I was completely knocked out by it. That led to a whole album. And now there's two albums out there. You can go to GarySiniseFoundation.org to learn more about the albums. They're beautiful. It's beautiful music, and the proceeds go to the Gary Sinise Foundation to help our mission.
Yeah, there's more information about Mac at GarySiniseFoundation.org and all that the organization does. You can follow Gary through all the social media. Also, wanted to mention that Gary Sinise and the Lieutenant Dan Band will be at Cantini on July the 12th if you want to go check out the band and support the work that they're doing there. Gary, it's great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, it's Gary.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks, Gary.
Go Cubs.
There you go. Gary Sinise talking about his foundation, talking about movies and documentaries and all things Veterans Affairs, but also the unimaginable for any parent losing a child, which he did a couple of years ago now, or I guess it's a year. It's about a year since his son Mac died from this rare form of cancer. But how great that he honors his son's memory this way with the music and all of the things that were important to his son. That's the kind of great guy that Gary Sinise is, and truly my honor, to talk with him. If you want to get more information about the music, if you want to get more information about the Gary Sinise Foundation, GarySinisFoundation.org is how you get all that. GarySinisFoundation.org, and you can get more information. And if you want to have, you know, be inspired, Gary has written a beautiful tribute to his late son that's also posted up on their website as well. Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. And Katz is back in the Chicago area, out at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. We're going to be doing one of our Dean's Night Out there on the 18th of May. And I'll tell you how you can win tickets to that, to join me to see the show in a minute. But from what I'm hearing, this particular production of Cats is unlike any that we have seen before. And believe me, I have seen, I don't even know how many times I've seen Cats over the years. It's been many. And, you know, it's I'm going to be completely honest with you. Cats, as it was originally presented, not one of my favorite shows. But I'm so intrigued about what they're doing with this out at the Paramount in Aurora. They've talked about in their commercials, and I've seen some clips, I guess, already so far, of a show where it's presented in a different way with acrobatics and contortion and aerialists and kind of a circus flair. And I'm willing to, you know, give it another shot. I mean, that's the beauty of restaging shows that we already know. You know, another director comes in, another cast comes in, and they can present the, you know, a similar story, same or similar story, but put a completely new twist on it, which it sure sounds like this one has. For example, I mean, the show has been running now in previews. And let's see here. So the 630 area code. Dean, we saw Cats at the Paramount yesterday, and it was amazing. The acrobats are incredible. So, you know, there's a review from one of our listeners this morning. Wait a minute, there was another one here someplace on our text line. I'm not going to be able to find it now. But there are three or four reviews of Cats that listeners had texted me earlier this morning. We were talking about Cats, and we got some extremely positive reviews. So even though this show has not been my cup of tea over the years, I'm really anxious to see what sounds like a very inventive restaging of the whole thing. And we're going to go out and see it on May 18th. That's Sunday. It's a 5 o'clock show. And you can join me to see the show. What you do is you go to WGNradio.com/contest. You look, you know, you'll see something there that says, you know, Dean's Night Out, or, you know, Dean Cats, or, you know, something like that. It'll be obvious when you get there. And all you do is sign up, and we will pick 10 winners. Each will get 2 tickets to join me for the May 18th performance of Cats. We have a little pre-show reception ahead of time. Gives us a chance to chat and, you know, take pictures. And, you know, we always have a nice time with our listeners at these things. So hopefully you'll be able to join us. Again, you go to WGNradio.com/contests. And it's my Dean's Night Out at the Paramount Theater. You must enter before Sunday, May 11th at 11:59 p.m. Central Time. All right? So good luck with that. And looking forward to it. Because I have, when I heard another production of Cats was coming in, I was not, honestly, I was not looking forward to it. through the theatrical productions and maybe one of the worst movies that have ever been made, the musical they made of Cats a few years ago, was an absolute disaster. It's considered by not just me, it's just not me being cranky about this. Almost everybody agreed that the movie version of Cats the musical may have been one of the worst movies that's ever been made. So when I heard there was another production of Cats coming for me to review, I wasn't looking forward to it until I heard it. I'm hearing from people already that they like it and that, you know, they're enjoying it. And it's, you know, the one thing I love about theater, I love inventiveness. I love when somebody takes a concept and completely, remakes it. I gotta love the ingenuity and the creativity of that. And I think that's what it's seeming like. I don't want to prejudge before I see the show, but it's sounding like that's what this production of Cats is about. I can tell you this, that they are pretty good at stuff like this out at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. The directors, the artistic director, just, you know, from top to bottom, they're into putting on quality shows. So I have to say that if the Paramount does it, you know, I'm pretty much on board with it all the time. So looking forward to that. Anyway, that's going to be coming up in the next hour on the show. I'm going to get into our Food Time show. And that includes kind of nostalgia cooking, I guess you might say. I was talking with Vince Vaughn earlier this week. I went to New York early last week and saw the new Vince Vaughn movie called Nonas, which is grandmother, grandma, you know, in Italian. It's a movie about a guy who loses his mother. His mother passes away. And to honor his mom and his grandmother, he opens an Italian restaurant. He wants to recreate their recipes. But, you know, he's not a cook, so he hires four Italian grandmothers, four nonas, to work in the kitchen and create these wonderful nostalgic recipes for his restaurants. Based on a true story, there really is a restaurant in Staten Island where this happened. A guy opens a restaurant to honor his mother. He hires the nonas, the grandmothers, to cook in the back, and I've never been to this restaurant. The next time I go to New York and have some time, I'll scoot over on the Staten Island Ferry and check it out, because I love a good Italian restaurant. And but so that's what this movie is based on. So we're gonna what I want to talk about are the recipes that your grandmothers or mothers made that nobody could come close to. You know what I'm talking about? The recipes that, even though you've tried to make them, even though you think you've got the recipe down, nobody could make it like grandma. Nobody could make it like mom could make it. You know, that's going to be our Food Time show for today. We're going to dig into some of those recipes. And to celebrate all of that, we're going to have Joey DeBono on my WGN-TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday, and he's going to make his Nona's eggplant parmesan recipe. I would argue that Joey's eggplant parm, Nona's eggplant parm, is the best that I've ever had, and he's going to show us how to make it.
Did you watch the Kentucky Derby yesterday?
Yes, I did, actually.
I did, too.
Always exciting to see that.
Yeah.
Love it.
Did you watch it?
I was
Carm, did you watch it?
Carm. He's got a sports department to run.
Did the last sportscast TikTok? He was halfway down the hall.
He was
the
asking
elevator.
Whether you saw the Kentucky Derby yesterday.
I did. I actually I watched it on the big screen on tape delay now they call it, I guess, American Family Field up in Milwaukee last night.
Oh, you were in Milwaukee last night.
Yeah. Made the
look at you doing the big drive down here in the morning.
We came back last night, but I'm jumping on that Cub bandwagon, Dean.
I know.
And the Derby in the rain. Not easy.
Mess.
Not easy for the horses.
A mess.
They just put their head down though and said, "You know what? I'm here to play ball."
I was actually concerned, really, about the fact that field was wet, the track was wet, about
muddy.
A horse.
It wasn't
very muddy, and I was very concerned that a horse would hurt themselves.
That's what I thought too.
Looking out for the horses. I like it.
That's right.
Absolutely.
It's can be very, very.
What about jockeys? The jockeys it's got to be a mess for them having all the mud being kicked all over the place.
The winning jockey had mud all over his jacket.
Did you guys cry in Seabiscuit?
Yes, I did, actually.
See? Me too.
Yeah, that's a very emotional movie.
Seabiscuit? Oh, sure. Yeah.
When Seabiscuit pulls it off in the end, I mean, if you're not feeling that.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, right. Well, there's a lot of twists and turns in there.
Movie's about 20 years old. I think it's okay. And the actual Seabiscuit even older than that. But, it was a really well-done, very emotional movie. Definitely. And then, amidst all that, in the rain, people are in the stands in their Kentucky Derby finery. You know, there's sort of a, like a Southern way of dressing.
They put on the big hats and the whole thing.
The big hats, and they've got all their finery on.
I've never gone. I've never really wanted to go, but I think I would have a lot of fun if I did go, if that makes sense.
Oh, you'd look nice in a hoop skirt.
Thank you.
You would.
I mean, there's got to be a lot to look at down there, if nothing else, right? Right.
I've never been to a horse race like that, but I've been to auto races that have a similar kind of theater attached to it. And it's more than half the show is what's going on around the track, not actually on the track. So I would imagine that's something. I'd like to have a mint julep. Isn't that the traditional drink?
It is. And
of the Kentucky Derby?
You can't go wrong there. And you're talking Indy.
I don't even know what it is.
It's got mint and a little julep in there.
That's the name, mint julep.
It's got a... I believe there's... I want to say there's some rum in there, Dean.
I like my julep on the heavy side. What's in a mint julep? Bourbon?
No.
It's got to be Kentucky bourbon.
Kentucky bourbon, maybe? Yeah.
Sugar?
I don't know.
There's definitely a lot of sugar. I think it's rum. Is it not?
Somebody will tell
us. Let's look this up here.
We have nothing but boozers and stoners listening to this show. We're going to be talking about grandma cooking today. Recipes that only grandma, nobody can touch what grandma or maybe your mom made. That's the premise of Vince Vaughn's new movie that's called Nona's, that he opens an Italian restaurant and he hires four Italian grandmas to cook in the back. Shwani, do you have memories of your mom or grandparent? And they made something that you just cannot even come close to.
Yes.
If you've tried it.
Yes. And it wouldn't be, an entree or anything like that, but it was baked goods. Because my mother grew up in southern Illinois, close to, a lot of farms and recipes and so forth. I will say they're fried chicken. Still some of the best I've ever had, but when it came to fruit pies, especially in the summer, and chocolate chip cookies, I don't know what my mother did.
From scratch.
I can still see her there, stirring up the batter.
Nothing wrong with the tube.
No.
Nothing wrong with the tube. I would take some right now.
Oh. But
when they made them from scratch.
Yeah. Yep. Those recipes still to this day just stick in my mind. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I'm going to say my mom's fried chicken, same thing.
Yeah.
That I've made it a few times. I'm not overly fond of fried chicken. I'm not overly fond of deep fried anything, really. I won't turn it away, but it's not something that I make very often. But my mom used to make like homemade fried chicken, like old-fashioned homemade fried chicken. Couldn't come close. And I don't know what she did. I don't know what was in the coating and the ingredients. I don't know if it was the oil, if it was the pan or, you know, the pot that they did the frying in.
Yeah. I don't recall a lot of breading on the fried chicken.
Just flour.
But it was flour and the skin was left on the, you know, on the chicken breast.
The best part.
And maybe it was the oil, a blending of something in there. Not a lot of spices, but it just was so good.
I want to say, this is just from memory, but I want to say it was flour.
Yeah.
Salt and pepper.
Yeah.
Maybe a little paprika.
That could be, yes.
Maybe a little garlic powder.
I don't know. Paprika. Now, not so much garlic powder, but the paprika would be part of it, yes.
I don't know. I don't know what would be in it. But, yeah, it was good. My mom, same thing, baker. But, you know, there are many, like, Greek dishes that I think about that my grandmother made, whose recipes were passed down to my mother. And, you know, now I'm trying to figure it out because my mother didn't write anything down. So,
well, were a lot of the recipes written with kind of vague terms like a pinch of this and a dash of that?
Well, there wasn't even really anything written. It was spoken.
Oh.
When my mom was getting older, I asked her, you know, can you write some as well? I can't write it down because I don't really have like exact measurements. I just know how much you put in. So, you know, we tried that for a little while and it just didn't work. But I don't know. There's something, you know, maybe it's, I think part of it also is that nostalgia and the love that went into the preparation of those foods. That's part of what made it so delicious.
Yeah.
Is that mom made it or grandma made it or, you know, and therefore it was that delicious.
And they had that passion for it, you know, and knowing that they were cooking. You had often said how it made your mother very happy that she was making all this great food for people.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Somebody texted in here saying a lot of people use lard back in the day for fried chicken.
Yeah.
I saw something on America's Test Kitchen yesterday, because that's the glamorous way that I spend Saturday afternoons, watching all the stupid cooking shows. I love those shows. I sit and watch them all day. But they did a thing on America's Test Kitchen yesterday of what the difference is between lard and shortening. You know, like Crisco?
Yeah, yeah, right.
I never knew what the difference was. And for me to explain it to you now, I couldn't. Except that a lot of people used lard or shortening in baked products because there was less moisture, and therefore the breadings, the things that you were baking, the doughs and so forth, would come out better. By using those products.
Yeah, I think my grandmother used lard for, you know, pie dough.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yep.
She also fried in bacon grease.
Oh, my mom saved all the
grease. Saved the grease in a big can.
Yep.
And when it came time to prepare something, maybe that's what made the fried chicken so good.
Yeah, the old oil.
Yeah.
Lard is an animal fat. Shortening is a vegetable fat. Somebody texts in. Okay. But, I mean, I think that's what the difference is with some of that stuff and why things taste better. You know, it's a matter of the ingredients that you put in. But I think also I think a major part of it is psychological, that if it was your mom or grandmother's, if they actually made it, it was much more delicious than you slaving and making it yourself.
We had another wonderful thing growing up. There was an open-air fresh fruit market about three blocks from where we lived, and my mother would give me money.
Yes.
And I could either run up there or ride my bike, and she said, go get some apples or go get some blueberries.
Oh, nice.
And
fresh picked, probably.
Fresh picked, and they were from Michigan farms or Northern Indiana farms, and take those home And my mother, especially when it came to apple pie, something inside the cinnamon and spices, yeah. They're just the best.
Yeah, that's good stuff. My mom would do something similar also and send me to the store, but it was for a pack of Salem cigarettes.
Are you old enough to buy these?
Here's the note. She would give me a note. Sell my son, Dean, a pack of Salems.
I had friends. Their parents would smoke, and they'd do the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, I did all the time.
A note.
Yeah, you get a note, and sometimes
that's not going to fly today.
Sometimes I go to the grocery store, but sometimes because it was a little closer, I would go to the liquor store.
It was 12-year-old Dean walking into a liquor store.
One block. It was a block away from the house. It was a little closer. So I would go to the liquor store, and all these mopes were sitting around a bar drinking. And this, you know, little Dean walks in. I have a note. My mom wants a pack of Salems. Here's a note that she... And they would sell them to me like it was no big deal.
Was the deal there. So among the cast of characters there, was there someone named Otis by any chance?
There were plenty of Otises.
Otises in there.
Yeah, there was no shortage. Believe me, there was no shortage of Otises in there. Otis was there. Crazy Guggenheim was there.
Crazy Guggenheim.
Joe the bartender.
Joe the bartender. Sing us a song, won't you, Craze?
I'd go in, get my smokes. Get my mom's smoke, maybe a Slim Jim. And you wonder why I am the way I am today.
Now, here's the question. Do people know who Crazy Guggenheim was and Joe the bartender?
Well, if you're 90 years old, you probably do. you and I and 90-year-olds know who he is. Crazy Guggenheim was a character on the Jackie Gleason show.
Played by?
The great Frank Fontaine.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a character. And it was, I don't know why we thought an alcoholic was funny. But it was a guy who was, he was a drunk, the guy. And he would sit and tell jokes and stories to Jackie Gleason's character, Joe the bartender. But it was like Foster Brooks's character.
Right. But he would end up singing a song at the end of the routine, though.
Yeah, well, he had a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
It was very Gomer Pyle-like. Because during the sketch... where he's this drunk guy, and then all of a sudden he breaks into the song, and he's got this beautiful
something
operatic
like
voice.
My Wild Irish Rose or something like that. Yeah.
Yes. Look it up.
Look
it up on your Google machines, kids. It's another little blast from the past, from our show to you. I love this here. It's 312-981-7200. Dean, my mom sent me to the gas station to get her three packs of cigarettes with notes.
Now, here it is. Here it is again. You wanted recipes, family recipes, now we're getting texts
stories
about where you bought cigarettes for your parents.
Where you bought smokes for your parents. 630 area code. My dad would send me to Grandma Dew's corner store to get cigarettes. She always asked how my dad and grandma were doing.
Just fine. I'm buying them more cigarettes.
Grandma Dew.
Wonder where that was. Does it say?
No.
Okay.
It does not. But boy did we ever strike a note, though. The texts are going crazy for this. 630, my mom sent me to the store with a note to get her Winston's.
Yeah. That was a popular brand.
You know why, Schwanny? Because Winston tastes good like a
cigarette should. That's right.
It's the cigarettes that Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble smoked.
They were actually advertising on
animated characters.
Flintstones.
Children's animated characters advertising cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Right, Fred?
Oh, and this is nice. 630 area code remembers that he would go and get the smokes. He would go get Territon cigarettes for his parents because I'd rather fight than switch. It's a famous commercial.
Remember, and they would have someone with the black eye
on the
screen.
I would go to buy the cigarettes, and they would have the Playboy magazines behind the counter. That's the truth.
Yes, it is.
That's such the truth. You know what? That reminded me of something else. I was reading a story. This is completely off the cigarette subject. But you'll be able to relate to this because I was reading that little baby turtles are popping up all over the Chicago area lately. You know what I mean? Those little, remember those tiny little turtles that they used to sell at
a pet
Woolworths
store? Yeah, yeah.
Pet
yeah.
stores and Woolworths. I remember them at
Woolworths.
Yes,
they had them in a Woolworths or a store like a Woolworths.
They had the dime store.
The dime store.
As they used to be
There
called.
Was another store called Newberry's that sold them.
Yeah. And
Goldfish.
They had Goldfish. They had, I want to say, like some kind of reptiles. Maybe chameleons?
Chameleons or a little salamander or something like that.
There was a
lizard?
Like an aquarium with these little tiny turtles. And, we used to go and play with them in the store. I never bought one. We were never allowed to have it in the house. But apparently these things are popping up all over the Chicago area.
Where?
I don't have the article here in front of me, but they're saying that if people see them, they should contact animal control because these baby turtles less than 4 inches in circumference, I guess.
Length, really.
Length, okay. Less than 4 inches were banned because of a chance of them passing salmonella.
Oh,
and that's why you don't see them anymore. That's why they don't sell them anymore. But I don't know. For some reason, it's possible you may see them around the area. But I want to say I seem to remember like Ray Rayner doing turtle races.
Did turtle races, yes.
On the show.
Yep. And, yep.
All that.
Yeah, they did. That's right.
Right? You would paint them. You'd get these little turtles and
paint the shell.
You'd paint the shell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Boy, this has been the most interesting half hour. We've gone from buying Territon cigarettes to favorite recipes to turtles. I love it.
Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show, is on the air. The award-winning All Things Edible program heard every Sunday at this time. Back for some nostalgia cooking on the show here today. In honor of Vince Vaughn's new movie that's coming out on Netflix next Friday, it's called Nona's, which is a story about a guy who opens an Italian restaurant. True story, by the way. A guy opens an Italian restaurant in Staten Island, New York, and hires four grandmas to be the cooks because, as we all know, you can't beat grandma's cooking no matter what. That's what the movie is about, so that's why I wanted to spend a little time and find out which recipes are, you know, are the ones that your grandma or your mom made that nobody can even come close to. We've already got a lot of people on our text line, but we'd love to hear from you as well on the phone or text 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we've got a lot of lard recipes, as it turns out. We were talking about the difference between how grandmas would cook with Crisco or lard as opposed to, peanut oil or olive oil or, you know, healthier, lighter oils. Grandmas did it with these shortenings. You know, shortenings are solid fats like Crisco or lard. A lot of people sharing their recipes on our text line for apple pies and apple pie crusts that were made with lard or Crisco because it made the crust flakier, more delicious. Here's the 815 area code that said, my brother used to say that our grandma could make a can of ravioli taste good. That might be the case. Here's, I've got all kinds of recipes. Oh, here we go. The 574 area code, not familiar with that. But every year on the 4th of July, my mom would make homemade black raspberry cobbler with the fresh berries that we would pick from a patch in the back of our house. Berry cobbler. Super easy to make, by the way. I've made cobbler many times. Super delicious. But, I'm sure that part of the magic of grandma cooking were the use of fresh ingredients like that, where you're going out into the backyard to, get a patch of, berries, and you cook directly with those. Of course, they're going to be much more delicious. Let me see here. 773 area code Dean. Loving your show. Thank you very much. Always appreciate. My mother's fried chicken was the best. I know she always used the black iron skillet. Same with my mom. She used the cast iron skillet. Probably the same. With something like Crisco or bacon grease. And the only season was lightly floured salt and pepper, but not ground pepper. It was just the regular pepper that we knew as a child. Oh, I think you probably mean she didn't freshly grind it, but the pre-ground pepper that we all had when we were kids that came out of the little tin, right? We all had that when we were kids. That may be the case. That's all my mom also used, was salt and pepper and flour. Honestly, I don't remember. For some reason, paprika's in my mind. I could be 1,000% wrong with that. I'm not really sure. 312-981-7200. Jim, you've got some nostalgic recipe that nobody made better than your mom or grandmother?
Oh, yeah, for sure. My grandma, the one thing she used to do was send me to the IGA store. No money or nothing. Cannibalist, he'd bring... Give me a pound of flour, a half pound of sugar. Say, oh, okay, I'll put that on Goldie. She'll pay at the end of the month. And I always got her a Dr. Pepper. But her chicken and dumplings,
oh,
my goodness. The dumplings had a chicken flavor to them and
man,
a butter taste. And it was so good.
Oh.
You guys keep talking about all the recipes, but the most famous thing in all the recipes was the love that grandma gave to the food.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I was talking about this with somebody the other day, that it's not just the ingredients that are, on the recipe list, but it's the love that went into it. And most of the time, mom or grandma was not only, taking care of, back in those days, 4, 5, 6 kids in the house. There were, everyone had big families then. She was raising the family, keeping the house, doing all that, special occasions. I don't know how they managed to keep all those plates spinning. That's a lot of work. Yeah. That was a lot of work.
Yeah.
So chicken and dumplings. Yeah. Have you ever tried to make your grandma's chicken and dumplings to see if you could replicate it?
No, I can do her fried chicken. The other thing I wish I could do is her cobblers.
Mm.
She did, like you said, fresh cobblers.
Yeah.
She'd make hers mulberries.
With what? Mulberries, you said?
Mulberries, yeah. The mulberry trees were back by the railroad tracks, and she'd give me a galvanized bucket. I go back. Pick mulberries and blueberries all day long.
Yeah.
And then make a big giant cobbler. It was so good.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
I miss
these. Yeah, we used to do that with fresh strawberries. We'd go back, blueberries, and we had a raspberry bush that was gigantic. And, you know, you'd stick your hands in, you know, those raspberry bushes are nothing but thorns in there. You cut up your hands trying to get the raspberries out of there. But you fill up a bucket, just like you're saying, and you bring it in, and presto, next thing you know, you got a cobbler or a fresh pie or, you know, something out of the deal that was so delicious.
Raspberry fingers.
Yeah, right, right. Never occurred to me to put some gloves on while I was picking those raspberries. Jim, have a great day. I appreciate your call. Thank you.
It's a great show, as usual.
Thanks, buddy. I really appreciate that. Here's Kate. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi. I absolutely love your show, Dean. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My mother, of course, was the best cook. She had a light touch. She experimented. Or of Eastern European origin, but she would try French, Italian, Oriental.
Yeah.
One of my favorite dishes was what used to be called pigs in a blanket. Yeah. It would be round steak, pounded really, really thin, and she would stuff it with a mixture that was sautéed bacon, onion, and parsley.
Ooh.
Put it in the thin slices of round steak, and then tie it with string or a skewer, and then just slowly sauté it. One of the best dishes ever.
Yeah, that's, you know what, that sounds like Italian brujol.
Yes, yes, it is similar to that.
Yeah, that sounds, except that the brujol, the same thing. I've never made it, but you take a piece of beef, pound it, you know, within an inch of its life, so it's so thin. Stuff it, like you said. Usually it's breadcrumbs, cheese, scallions, stuff like that. Tie it up.
Right.
And it goes into a sauce, a red sauce, and it cooks that way. But your way also sounds very delicious because you're getting the caramelization of the sautéing.
Exactly, exactly. That's what made it so delicious.
Yeah.
But I love brujol too. I wish there were more restaurants that served it the traditional way.
Right, yeah. You hardly ever find restaurants that have brujol, which is that rolled beef. Now, have you tried to make this pigs in the blanket yourself? And
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
It doesn't. Do you come close to the way your mom used to make it?
You know, I mean, I think I do. It's just that she had a lot of patience when it came to cooking. And when I started out cooking, I used to take shortcuts. I have since learned in my old age to follow recipes and take your time, and that it's the end result is worth taking your time.
Yeah.
But I mean, my mother could make, if we weren't feeling well, she would saute some ground round. And ground round was, you got it from the butcher. You'd choose the round steak, he'd grind it for you, she'd bring it home. She'd saute that in butter for breakfast in the morning on toast.
Oh, man.
And that was the best.
Oh, my gosh. Ground round sautéed in butter for breakfast.
Exactly.
That's fantastic.
Which may be why I have high cholesterol today, but it was delicious. Right?
That is fantastic. Well, you know, here just to another example of stuff that they fed us back then, they had no idea nutritionally or health-wise what they were serving. A big treat for us was a slice of Wonder Bread slathered in butter and granulated sugar on top of it, you know, sprinkled all on top, and that was your,
of course,
that was your big treat.
And
I just think this is nothing but butter and sugar, and it was so delicious.
Of course it was. I mean, my mother lived to be 90, so.
See, there you go.
You know.
Yeah, somehow it worked out, right?
Right, right.
Kate, I appreciate the call, and thank you. Have a great day today.
You as well, Dean. Take care. Bye-bye.
I love these recipes. Ground round and butter for breakfast. Sign me up. It's 12:50. This is Dean Richards, our Food Time show on the air here at 312-981-7200. Grandma recipes. Things that grandma or mom made that nobody can hold a candle to. That's what we're looking for here today. Some great recipes. We're going to be doing on my TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday morning at 9:15. I'm going to have Joey DeBono in to show me how to make his grandma's eggplant parmesan. It's the greatest eggplant parm I've ever had. Tufano's restaurant on Vernon Park Place over in the old Little Italy neighborhood. Fantastic eggplant parm. They have been serving it at this restaurant since 1930. Grandma used to make it in her kitchen right next door to the restaurant. They put a window in between her house and the restaurant so she could just open up the window, pass it through, and they would serve it in the restaurant. It's a fantastic Chicago story. And we're going to do it Wednesday morning. About 9:30 in the morning is when we do that. Hey, Dave, you're on WGN.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Hey, I want to talk about lard. Lard and Crisco.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a retired chef, and I was also a wilderness guide. And when we were up in Canada, we would always fry our fish in lard or Crisco and the potatoes and onions. And, man, you're talking about 10-minute-old walleye.
Yeah.
Wow. There's no way to beat it. You just can't. You can't do that at home.
Yeah, freshly caught, and then in the lard, it had to be a different kind of texture and flavor.
It's the only way you could pack it in.
Yeah,
because you're in the wilderness for 10 days.
Right, right.
You couldn't bring butter or oil or nothing. You had to bring lard or Crisco.
Yeah.
And wow, I'm telling you, potatoes and onions and fish in a fresh cast iron skillet.
That sounds
over an open fire.
That
oh,
sounds good. That sounds good. Did you dust up the walleye at all with some flour?
Oh, yes. I made my own breading. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. I would pack it in. Yes. I would triple bag it in case it rains.
Triple bag.
You know, make sure it was dry.
Protect the breading.
Yes. Absolutely. That was your dinner.
And carrying,
you're in the wilderness.
Carrying around a cast iron pan, too. That's commitment right there.
So that nobody else would you know, yell about carrying that extra weight.
Yeah, exactly.
I carried it. As a chef, I made sure we had what we needed.
And it was good protection against any wild animals you might come in contact with.
You had to hang your food in a tree.
That's right. The raccoons or the bears. Exactly right. I know.
The bears.
Thank you, sir. The bears. Dave, thanks for the call. I love that story. Here's Marty. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hey, Dean. How you doing? Hey. Love your show.
Thanks, buddy.
Hey, listen. My grandmother came from Eastern Europe. She used to make homemade bread.
Nice.
And, you know, everything was, you know, reach in and take a few fingers of salt, a few fingers of this. So finally, my mother and my sister had her, put it on paper so we could weigh it and stuff.
Yeah.
And after she passed, we kept trying to get it done. And we could never figure it out. It would never turn out right. Then one time, my niece said, how about if we put everything, because they didn't have a lot of refrigeration, so we made everything at room temperature.
Yeah.
Used small eggs, not large eggs. Regular eggs, not large.
Right.
Whole milk. All this stuff. It turned out fantastic.
No kidding.
You look back sometimes and you say, wait a minute, they didn't have refrigeration. Everything was cold. It was all room temperature.
Yeah, right, right. And
so it go ahead.
Well, I was going to say a lot of the cookbooks, you know, especially for baking, they'll tell you to leave everything out on the counter before you start cooking.
Yeah.
To make it room temperature, because otherwise things don't congeal quite the right way if the butter is too cold or the milk is too cold or whatever ingredient that you're putting in is too cold, it does make a big difference. So do you bake the bread now?
My niece does. She's out in Colorado now, so we don't get it as often as we used to.
Yeah.
But she does bake it. And my uncle used to make Manhattan clam chowder, and it was fantastic.
Oh.
But the stuff with that was we used to learn, you make it, because we had a restaurant, you'd make it and cool it off at night and warm it up the next day and serve it. Because after it sat all night long, all the flavors and stuff would meld together.
Oh, that's I do that all the time with if I make spaghetti sauce or something like that. I'll make it the day before Because it always tastes better the next day. Always tastes better the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good stuff,
it
Marty.
It certainly does.
Good stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Okay, here's on our text line, 708. My father made onion sandwiches. Onion sandwiches. It says here, I liked them, but I never told anybody about the sandwich. I was embarrassed. Fast forward 60 years, I saw a famous chef on TV making them. Onion sandwiches. I don't know what the recipe is. I'm guessing, you know, if that's a caramelized onion, I would eat that every day for the rest of my life. I love, love, love caramelized onions. So if that's what it is, but I knew people who would, they would just take an onion, thin slices, put it on some rye bread with some mustard, and they would eat the raw onions like that. That was not that uncommon back in the day. Excuse me, I've got hiccups all of a sudden. Let's see, what else do we have here? My mom's pan-fried venison and perch. Best ever. I'm going to have to think about that a little bit. 630 area code says, my mom's best recipe was her German potato salad and scratch yeast dinner rolls. For her church sale, she made 12 dozen rolls, the best rolls ever. Love your show. Longtime listener, Ann. Thank you very much, Ann, for those. I can imagine the German potato salad, delicious. I got to say, you know, while we're bragging about our mom's potato salads, my mom made an American-style potato salad. I've made this on TV, my mom's potato salad recipe. The recipe is on there, WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. But she also made a Greek-style potato salad, which was not mayonnaise-based at all. It was olive oil with, obviously potatoes and celery and olives, kalamata olives. I mean, it had a very Greek flair to the whole thing. But that German potato salad, sounds absolutely amazing. 309 area code. I have two fresh rhubarb pies in the oven right now. The crust is made with 100% Crisco, but my family thinks it's all butter. Don't tell them. That's funny. I don't think I've never made a pie crust with Crisco or lard. I've always used, the quote modern ingredients. I'm going to have to give them both a try. People are asking me about this eggplant Parmesan that I was talking about, Joey DeBono's restaurant. The restaurant is called Tufano's, T-U-F-A-N-O-S. They're asking the name of the restaurant, Tufano's, T-U-F-A-N-O-S, and it's on West Vernon Park Place in the Little Italy neighborhood. Joey's going to be on with us on Wednesday morning, 9:30, and we're going to make his grandma, his Nona's eggplant parm. So I hope you'll tune in for that. And that's going to wrap it up for us today. Bob Surratt is back after a few days off tomorrow morning. We'll join him as we always do between 8 and 8:30 and talk entertainment, have some fun on the WGN-TV Morning News. I've got all the stars from this new Vince Vaughn movie. This week, we're going to be featuring my interviews with Vince Vaughn, with the Nonas in the movie, Susan Sarandon, Brenda Vaccaro, Lorraine Bracco, Joe Manganiello is also in the cast of this movie. We'll have it all for you this week on WGN-TV Morning News.